Hey, Dave, the King of Mexico.
Good morning, guys and ladies.
Seen a lot of you in this room lately, and it gives me pause that we need a more stringent guest vetting system.
We need a security guard at the door.
I feel like somehow Dave is on the mic a lot. Friday, you were at the guys' night out, down at the bike.
Yeah.
And heard you had a great time. Heard the listeners were awesome again this time around, right?
Always a good time.
It's always a good time.
Yeah. And I heard that Kevin was able to keep those men away from his table that take his money every single time they do one. And therefore was able to walk out a winner for a change.
Yep, so and I donated a lot of the bike's money to,
to
listeners. So, you know, we evened out.
Well, Dave was walking around and shaking hands and meeting people. And he had an interesting conversation that I think will lend itself to an interesting phone topic. Tell me about the young man you met.
Well, we met a guy named Lance. And, you know, Lance is such a common name that I started throwing out a bunch of these different names of like, oh, were you named after this guy, this guy, this guy? And I just threw out for fun. Lancelot.
Because what are the chances?
Yeah.
So now hold on a sec. When you say Lance a common name, meaning in your mind you were thinking that he might have been named after somebody?
I just thought it was a normal name. I didn't even think he would be named after anybody just because I'm not named after anyone special. I'm just, you know, that's my name.
Well, your parents don't like you.
Yeah, right. But so I just threw out a name and I don't know why Lancelot came to my mind because I've never read the book or anything. So, you know, and he's all like, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It was Lance.
That's what it was. And I was like, what?
I think I yelled, I think he was kidding.
He was named. Now, forgive me. I don't know a lot about Lancelot. That was King
was
Arthur, right?
Yeah.
Was that the Knight of the Round
Knight
Table?
Knight of the Round Table, yeah.
And what's Lancelot's deal?
He's one of them?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know anything about him.
I just wondered if he was like a strong and powerful like leader or won a war or something like that. I'm just wondering how a set of parents would choose.
Isn't that weird?
Unless they just saw the name in a book and they thought, oh, that's a great name. And maybe it wasn't even because of the qualities of the character. It's just that they liked the way the name sounded. But not Lance. His name is Lancelot?
No.
No, his name is Lance.
But he was named after
Lancelot. He was named after Lancelot.
Yes.
Well, that is unusual.
So usually it seems like parents go with, you know, relatives, family name or something, grandfather maybe, something. But when you're named after a famous person, fictional or real, it's odd.
I don't know how odd it is, Kevin. By the way, we'd love to hear from you if you were named after a famous person, particularly if it's an unusual name. Or like Lancelot, a person from literature, doesn't have to be a real person, but we want to hear from you at 1-800-520-1067. I think a lot of people are named after famous people in that when a person with an unusual name becomes famous, like there was nobody named Beyonce 20 years ago, but I bet there are lots of Beyoncés now,
sure.
Because
but
that's now a name. Yes, I bet there are.
I don't think there's very many Beyoncés out there.
Really?
You don't think there Beyonce.
You don't think there are a million ladies out there who love and admire Beyonce? And by the way, I bet there's going to be a lot of Adeles too, because they're fans of hers and they like everything she stands for, and they think that's a good, strong, powerful, positive name to give to their daughter.
Look, maybe just the single ones.
Oh,
file. Has Dave been in the file?
You get right out.
Happening?
You get out right now.
I had to. Come on.
Allie, am I wrong, or do you think that is probably happening?
I don't see a lot of Beyoncés. I think that's a lot of pressure to put on a little girl, quite frankly. I don't think certain names like that are kind of so far out there.
We
I don't
named
think
one of our kids Rage,
recycled.
And then the middle were against the, and then
yeah.
Last name is Machine.
That name isn't far out, though. I mean, once it becomes as widely known as Adele's and Beyonce's are, it just becomes part of the language lexicon. I don't think it's an outlier anymore.
No,
by the way,
I mean, like,
Christine our friends, she has friends, Jimmy and Jenny, who named their daughter Adele.
There you go.
That's one. I mean, I don't know that there's a million of them, but I think that that's what I think. Yeah, when celebrities become popular and beloved, I think a lot of people name their kids after them.
But I mean, if you have a weird name like Beyonce, like how many Moon Zappas are there? Like moons and stars and.
But Moon Zappa wasn't the star that Beyonce is.
No,
you know
but
I mean?
It was a popular person, you know, and I don't think anyone said, I'm going to name my kid Moon because.
Yeah,
you know,
I've seen a lot of moons, that's for sure.
Popular.
And let me ask you this, because we're going right to the calls here at 1-800-520-1067. Let me ask you this. Do you think that the people who are named after a celebrity feel any kind of connection at all or care about or know about or like that celebrity at all? Or you think it just doesn't matter, like doesn't impact your life at all? It's just your name.
I think it's just your name.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
All right, you divorced yourself from what your parents' original intentions were. All right, let's start with line 4, 1-800-520-1067. If you can't call, you can also text, same number. I can't imagine who Mariah was named after, but let's find out. Let's get her on the line and see what she has to say.
Hey, Mariah.
Hi.
So,
like baby was pants of fire.
how old are you, Mariah?
I'm 23 years old.
All right, so that is perfect. That's right when Mariah Carey was at her reddest and hottest. And your parents, well, what have they told you about it?
Well, my mom wanted to name me Lizette after one of my uncle's ex-girlfriend's sister. But she heard Mariah, and she really liked it, so she kind of just put that together.
Okay, so wait a minute. So did she hear the name Mariah Carey from Mariah Carey and think, oh, I like that first name, or did she worship Mariah Carey?
No, she just liked her. She just heard the name and she liked it.
Was it an uncommon, do you know if it was an uncommon name back then? It was it because of Mariah Carey that name exploded?
I think so. Like, now I haven't even met that many Mariahs. Or they spell it, like, way different than she does. Like, mine is spelled just like hers. And it's annoying because every time I tell someone my name, they're like, oh, Carey? And I'm like, no, that's not my last name.
By the way, you owe your parents thanks for spelling it the same way as the common popular spelling of Mariah Carey's name, because it would be even worse for you if your name were Mariah. You'd have to sit through O like Carey, but then you'd have to explain that it wasn't spelled the way they know it.
Yeah.
So you should be grateful, is what Bean's saying.
All right, yeah. Mariah, appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Let's go to Azaria in Buena Park.
I wonder who that could be.
That's odd, right?
Yep. Hi, Azaria.
So apparently back in the 80s, there was a couple that claimed a dingo stole their baby while they were camping.
Yeah.
And her name was Azaria, and my mom named me after her.
Your mom names you after the little girl that was supposedly swooped up by a dingo.
For the record,
her parents actually killed.
That's amazing.
That's insanity.
So you have a murder name.
Yeah, basically. So at work, I actually go by Anne because it's a lot easier. And people are like, where did you get that name, Azaria? I'm like, just call me Anne. Like, let's not even worry about it.
We don't even need to go there. Don't worry about it.
Now, did it make it more confusing for people when Hank Azaria became well known?
Yeah, people are like, oh, you're named after Hank Azaria. I'm like, no, I'm not.
No, you should say yes, I am. You should go with yes on that one.
Yes.
That is so strange. You were named after the dingo stole my baby. That is, I never would have predicted that.
That's pretty strong.
All right, Azaria, thank you for sharing your story. We appreciate it. 1-800-520-1067. Calls and texts. You were named after a famous, or in this case, infamous person, or an imaginary character, too. We want to hear your stories next on K-Rock.
Just to head up Nirvana, let's take one phone call. This is Alex in Simi Valley. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you. You were named what?
Oh, I named my son after Archer and the voice of John H. Benjamin.
How about that?
All right.
You got a little Archer at home.
Yep.
Now, a lot of our audience knows and loves and should, because it's a phenomenal show. But he must meet a lot of people who have never heard of that cartoon and are confused by that name because they've never seen it before, right?
They have no idea, and I have to explain it to them, and they kind of laugh. But when I told my parents, my dad thought it was awesome because he actually watches the cartoon.
Oh, that is awesome.
And
so,
he loved it.
Now that you've – how old is your son?
7 months.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is all brand new. So are you? Yeah. Do you think you're going to regret naming him Archer because of how often you and he are going to have to explain, no, you see there's this cartoon and there's a character, or you think it's going to be cool?
It'll be cool, but in 20 years, no one's going to know – anything about the show.
Yeah.
And it's just a cool name anyway.
It is
Archer.
A cool name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Benjamin Archer.
I think we approve.
That's a cool name.
I think we approve
it. You can keep it.
We allow it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Alex, let's play some Nirvana now on K-Rock. Dedicate that to everyone who's named Kurt. How about that? Because we're talking about people who are named after famous people at 1-800-520-1067. Getting a lot of texts, too. Hello, my name is from the 323. Hello, my name is Eric. I was named after Prince Eric from The Little Mermaid. All right. My mom named my brother Dominic after the main kid from Kindergarten Cop.
Really?
The main kid.
Wow. How about that? Heather writes in, our last name is Griffin. I named my son Blake, same as the Clipper, but not on purpose. My kid is 22. So this is, in other words, this is a situation where it wasn't named after a famous person, but at some point in his life, a person became famous with the exact same name. And we all know the havoc that that wreaks on somebody, right?
Yep. Let's go to the phones. We got Ray in La Habra. Hi, Ray.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
So I named my son Logan after Wolverine.
Oh, I bet that's becoming an increasingly popular name.
Yeah, and it was not easy. My wife was completely against it, and the only reason I wanted Logan was because of Wolverine. And my firstborn son was not Logan because she fought me on it. And we had actually decided on Nixon, and the baby was born. And when my father-in-law came into the delivery room, he asked what the baby's name was. When I told him Nixon, he was pissed. He said, Nixon was a crook. Why would you name your kid Nixon? And that's when I was able to flip it to Logan with my wife's permission.
Oh, see, you come up with a worse name than the name that you want, and then all of a sudden you look like you're compromising.
Smart.
It worked out pretty well.
I think I got to feel like the name Nixon is going to be toxic for a few more generations, don't you guys?
Yeah, I wouldn't name a kid Nixon.
Now, Kevin, thank you for the call, Ray. We appreciate it. We have a friend who named his daughter Reagan.
Oh, I have a few Reagan friends, females.
Because I think for most people, his image is probably still pretty positive, so you can get away with that, right?
I would think so, yeah.
I know Reagan's, Kennedy's, Lincoln's.
Let's try Sarah, line 8, please, Los Angeles, up next here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Now, here's a name that may have some negative connotations for some people. Let's find out how it worked.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi, good morning, party people.
Hi there.
Hi, so me and my cousin are very close, and she's a huge Star Wars fan. So she named her firstborn Anakin.
Oh. Now, we have talked to other listeners who have named their sons Anakin before. And I always have to ask, isn't he kind of the villain of the piece?
Well, kind of.
At the beginning, he's compassionate and wonderful and lovely, but then he turns. So maybe half of his life he'll be lovely, and then he'll go to the dark side.
Sarah's just anticipating later in life when he turns.
Yeah.
And his brother is named Benjamin Luke. So there is...
Wow.
I love your cousin. I love her.
I bet there are so many kids named after characters in the Star Wars movie.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think so, too. Boba Fett, you know?
Well, maybe not that, but
right.
The...
Jar Jars.
Leah and some of the other names.
All right. I'll bet we could find a Jar Jar. I'll bet we could.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Here's a text from the 310. My parents named me Camellia because they thought that's what Culture Club was singing in the song Karma Chameleon.
Wow, so they were mistaken and they gave her the name?
I feel like you would just look that up at some point before you put it down on the birth certificate, wouldn't you?
I would think so, yeah.
Let's go to line 4, Encino. This is going to be Jennifer. Always happy to have a Jennifer on the show because, as you know, all Jennifers are hot. Welcome. What's going on?
So, first of all, my name is Jennifer, which is pretty plain.
Right.
But I did find out later in life that it was based on my mom's favorite soap opera character.
Oh.
So that was always great.
Okay.
But we named my daughter Marley after Bob Marley.
Not after the dog?
Oh, dear.
Well, the dog series was after her, but she was 2 or 3, so that was kind of hard to explain to her that it wasn't after the dog. So we never showed her the movie or anything because of that. And even now, when people ask her what her name is, and she says Marley, and they said Marley, and she had to explain like Bob. They're like, oh, okay. And now me and her father don't smoke, and so far right now...
What family that doesn't smoke names their kid after Bob Marley? Get with it, Jennifer. Go smoke some weed.
Her dad asked me about, like, a day or two before, just because he happened to put on Bob Marley, and he thought, well, that's a great name. Let's name her Marley. And I was like, that's not happening. Well, once drugged up in the hospital, and they asked us for our name.
Yeah, that's when you get them.
Went ahead and put Marley for her name, so they got free range. I also grew up with a lot of girls named Selena because I grew up in South Texas.
Oh, so Selena, sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Everybody was named Selena growing up because, well, obviously, of this singer.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for listening. All right, we got time for a couple more. Who do you like here, Kevin? Let's go to Dylan. Let's go to Dylan, Santa Clarita, line 3.
Let's go to Dylan in Santa Clarita, line 3. Hey, Dylan.
Hello. Hi. Good morning.
Named after a famous person. What do you got?
Yeah, so my name is Dylan. My mom's a big 80s fan, and so she named me after Matt Dillon, the actor.
After Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Your phone broke up. I thought you said after Matt Dillon.
Yeah. Okay. It's Matt Dillon.
Are you spelled like Matt Dillon? D-I-L-L-O-N?
No, I'm actually spelled D-Y-L-A-N because she was actually also a fan of
Bob
the Dillon. 90s show 90210.
Oh, okay.
Which Luke Perry was in. And Luke Perry's character is named Dillon, so she's like, oh, okay, I'll just use that spelling.
Yeah, Dillon McKay.
Yeah. By the way, you'll appreciate this. We got a text, Dillon, from the 562. My friend just went to a high school graduation recently, and they announced a Luke Perry Garcia. So apparently you're not the only one who's named after Luke Perry.
There we go. And yeah, my mom was such a big fan of Matt Dillon. I don't know if you guys ever saw the movie The Outsiders.
Sure.
He played a character named Dallas, and my little brother's named is Dallas.
All right, your parents.
So, wow. Kind of a connection there.
They need to have their naming rights taken away.
I think so. All right. Thank you for the call, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. The Bachelorette Report is next with Ralph and P right after this on K.
106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q, L-A and O-C's alternative rock. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 722.
Letters are hard.
That's right.
Yep.
Allie, her name is Reality Winner.
That's it.
Her name is Reality Winner, this woman that's in the news right now. Like, how is that a name for a human that lives on the earth with people?
Unreal.
All right. Hey, Bachelorette Report with Petrus and Ralph coming up in about 15 minutes.
She should be the Bachelorette if her name's Reality Winner.
No kidding,
right?
She
might be in jail, though. Oh.
First, though, Ralph, I'm glad you're in here because it's time to play America's favorite new game show, Bean Makes His Guess.
Bean makes his guess, yeah.
Ooh, ooh.
Brr. Bean makes his guess, yeah.
Who gets penis slapped?
Bean is a dick.
Pretty dope, man.
Just wanna tell ya,
I am the dumbest human that ever lived.
Now it's time for Bean Makes His Guess.
Yes. Talk to Omar about some of the sound bites that don't seem to apply.
Locked in, sorry.
Yep.
Locked.
No changes.
We go to ranker.com for today's list. I love this one, and I think you guys are going to do really well with it, too. Anyone who's ever tried to go up on stage knows that being a stand-up comedian is not an easy job. You have to be witty, charming, funny. However, there are many comedians who are not any of those things that causes them to be hated by the comedy community and by the general public as well. They may have some modicum of success over here, but most of the people are over there going, ah, I hate that person. Ah. These are the top 10 stand-up comedians that people love to hate. Huh. Everyone got that in mind?
Love to hate,
so it's not the worst.
These are people that are popular with a subsection of the audience, but the rest of the country or the rest of the world, the rest of the people who like comedy, look down on them.
Got it.
They go, that is not for me. How does anyone find that person funny?
Right?
So that's what we're looking for here. We're going to go around the room as we do and see how many in the top 10 we can get. Kevin, you are the ceremonial head of the table. You get the first guess. What say you?
I'm going to say one that will make you happy, Bean, and that's Dane Cook.
Absolutely.
Dane Cook is number 3 on the list, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, that's shocking.
Shocking that it's not higher?
I thought he'd be one.
What is it about Dane Cook, you guys, that think? I mean, he's one of the most – it seems like he's lost a step in the last few years. At one time, he was selling the bigger – you couldn't find a guy who could sell bigger venues than Dane Cook.
Yeah.
He was so popular, right? What was the rap on him? Why did people not like him?
Well, I know that you didn't like him because he sounded like he was doing funny material, mm-hmm. but there was no funny material.
Well, that's what it was. It was all shtick.
Yeah.
And once the shtick got old and the boys who loved him grew up, then everyone realized, well, this guy's not telling any jokes.
You know, this isn't funny.
He's just all Sufi and fingers. There's no real humor there.
Dane Cook, you are on the board, Kevin, with a point. He is at number 3. Ralph Garman.
I would have to say the thieving Carlos Mencia would have to be hated by the community.
Certainly. He is number 2 on the list. And, yeah, I mean, he was caught stealing jokes on numerous occasions, right?
Yeah.
And never really seemed to own up to it either.
Nah.
So... that's number 3. Number 2, well done, Ralph. Alan McKay.
Gallagher.
this list was from this century.
Wait a miss and her first up at bat.
Well,
it's just a pitching machine at this point. They didn't even put the pitcher out yet.
Okay.
By the way, there is only the top 10, so it's possible Gallagher made the list a little further down.
He did in 1978, yes.
But he's not on the list here. Kevin Ryder, please.
Larry the Cable Guy.
You are on fire.
Sorry,
he is number
Allie.
4. Larry the Cable Guy is number 4.
Chip's on fire, by the way. Chip is on fire.
But he's, I mean, she helped me with that one. But
by writing it down and showing it to you?
I couldn't remember the name, so I said to Chip, "You might be a redneck if." And then she wrote down.
Not the guy.
I know, but that's another guess.
I wrote that first.
That's another guess that I have.
He's the get-her-done guy. Larry the Cable Guy is the get-her-done guy.
Yeah.
All right, so Carlos Mencia at number 2, Dane Cook at number 3, Larry the Cable Guy at number 4, Gallagher nowhere to be seen. Ralph Garman, you're up.
How about Jeff Foxworthy?
Jeff Foxworthy is not on the list. That is a surprise to me because in my mind, he's hand-in-hand with Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, I thought all those rednecks would feel that way.
Alan McKay.
Jay Leno.
Not on the list.
Come on!
He's kind of a legend in the stand-up community, Allie. That's not a great choice.
I don't like what he did to Conan.
Okay.
All right.
He's sort of a legendary.
That's a different list.
Oh. Different list.
Okay.
Top 10 mean people who did things to Conan.
Mean to Conan.
Okay.
All right, Kevin Rice.
Carrot Top.
Again, no, I don't think you're taking this seriously anymore.
How dare you?
Ralph Garman.
Oh, boy. So many. Now, this is not on me. This is not my choice.
Uh-oh.
But Joe Rogan.
No. Yeah. Although I will give you as a hint, there is somebody on this list who is a friend of the show that we adore, and he made the list.
Somebody on the list that we
Alan
adore.
McKay.
Who do we have in the show that we adore that would be on the top 10 hated
list? I'm trying to think of people who had beefs, like comedy beefs.
Mm-hmm. Allie?
Yeah.
With 0 points, would you like to take a guess?
You want to guess Carson now?
I'm going to go one better.
Red Skelton?
Freaking Bob Hope, am I right?
That guy. No, how about Pauly Shore?
All right, one more time around the horn, because then we got to get
Allie,
into the Bachelorette.
Please join us in the 21st century.
Bad comics. I'm
there's
not,
other people who are working today.
I just...
Kevin, your final guess, please.
Margaret Cho.
No. Ralph Garman, your final guess, please.
Kathy Griffin.
Number one, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
By the way,
she's very polarizing.
She's very polarizing, and she was in this top 10 even before the incident with Trump's head.
Just going to ask that. That's
because
funny.
People find whether it's her voice or her style of delivery, or she's just so frantic, or she's just people just find her annoying. I love her too, by the way.
Yeah.
But number one on the list, so it looks like Ralph, you've won the game. Allie, you get a final shot though.
Actually, they're tied.
We are tied.
Yeah.
Really?
Chip and I are tied.
Yes.
Chip or tied.
So you're saying there's a guy that comes in. That's on the list.
Yes, but let's not derail the segment.
That we adore.
That we adore.
By that, yes.
Well, it's not Jim Jeffries because that's just wrong. Right?
Oh, are we naming
we're
people
not naming
not now?
People that are not
that
on the list?
Are you fishing? Is that what you're
we're
looking for?
We're trying to name people that are on the list.
Yeah. Brad Williams.
All right, here's your top 10 most
we
hated
adore,
comedians. Number 10, Gilbert Gottfried.
Ow!
Sure.
Number 9, Michael Richards.
Oh, yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Sure.
Number 8, I think also for obvious reasons, Dennis Miller. Style of comedy that
Come
a lot of people
on.
Do
Yakov
not appreciate
Smirnoff
at
was
all.
Not far off then.
Number 7, and the friend of the show that I was stunned to see on this list. I've never heard anyone say a bad word about his comedy, is Jay Moore is on the Ranker.com list.
Yeah.
A lot of beefs, though. A lot of comedy beefs.
He does have comedy beefs.
Oh, is that what it is?
Number 6, Jeff Dunham.
Oh, I should have thought of that because I hate him.
Number 5, a guy who has been criticized for being a one-trick pony, Dat Fan.
He's not a comic.
I don't even know him.
He is a comic. He was the first winner of what was the show?
Last Comic Standing. Doesn't make you a comic.
He is a working comedian,
I think
but that
definition it kind of does, because
really
he's on
Last Comic Standing.
Just meant he was standing last. Doesn't
and
make
then,
you a
comic. Larry the Cable Guy, Dane Cook, Carlos Mencia, and Kathy Griffin. Nice job, you guys. This has been Bean Makes Us Guess.
Bean Makes Us Guess,
So, Bean, before Richard comes in.
Yeah, go ahead.
How do we handle the dickish part of him? What do we do? Do we tell him to his face? Or what?
I think you're confusing Richard Blade with maybe somebody else. Richard Blade is not that guy, but he is here at K-Rock once again, ladies and gentlemen, on the Kevin and Bean Show.
B-Rock.
How are you, sir?
B-Rock. Hey, I am fine. It's so great to see you guys. And I got something for Allie, because I know you have been waiting, I think it was like 32 years for this. I apologize. I ran out of them at the Glendale Galleria, so I brought that for you.
Allie told a story this week about what? Sneaking out of the house or something, Allie?
No, that one was my friend Heather Moody. All we wanted to do was go to a sticker giveaway at the Glendale Galleria. We were 13 and 14, so Heather's mom was like, fine, I'll take you. Pouring rain in L.A., you don't drive. So she was miserable the whole time. And we met you, and you were exactly what we hope you'd be. You were so kind and so nice. And it just...
And I took my shirt off.
You didn't, which was upsetting. But it was just everything that, as a kid that looked up to someone so much, you were that and then some. So
Richard Blade, who, by the way, can be heard all over this great land of ours on First Wave on Sirius XM. You also hear him on the Flashback Lunch at noon every day on 93.1 Jack FM. The stories that you tell in your new book that's out today called World of My Eyes, you had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people writing you, sending you letters through the mail asking for photos back in the early days of you being on K-Rock, which was insane to me to think about.
Yeah, it was. Well, there was no internet. There was no way to reach out and see what your favorite DJ looked like or the new guy, as I was at the time. And someone asked me on the air when we were taking the calls live, because we had no digital delay or anything like that, and they said, can you send a photograph? So I said, sure, just send me an envelope and I'll send you one back. And then I had no idea what that was starting. And I had Scott Mason, God rest his soul, great guy, take a photograph of me behind the building against a brick wall. Uh-huh. And we went to Photomat and got 250 made. And I thought that would last me about 4 years, and they were gone by the weekend. It was just crazy. That was the only way to get it out to people back then.
When did you start at K-Rock?
I started on June 18th, 1982.
Wow. That is over 35 years ago, Richard.
And it was amazing. It was life-changing. And I say in the book several times about K-Rock that they never paid their bills. No, I said...
Oh, that's true.
I said that K-Rock is one of the two most important radio stations in the history of this planet. K-Rock and BBC Radio 1 are the two most important stations, because K-Rock definitely for North America... and for helping the British bands, and BBC Radio 1 for breaking all kinds of music, whether it's American, Australian, English, whatever. But those two stations, that there's never been stations like
that. When Bean and I started, we were, scared, because it was K-Rock.
Right.
And we didn't want to ruin it, and we were scared. We didn't know what the DJs would be like and how they would accept us or not accept us, and you couldn't have been more kind.
Oh, well, you guys...
You and everybody on the staff was so kind. I didn't know what to do with it. I was like, are they faking? Are they really this nice? You're really this nice.
Well, the thing was, when Rick Carroll put the staff together, he didn't want fake people on the air, because back in the early 80s, everyone's, hey, it's 15 minutes past the hour. We've got a great song coming up. I just love this one. And he did not want that. He wanted us to sound like we were. So that's why you had Jed with his incredible laugh and his nonsensical words from time to time, which was brilliant.
Most of the time, yeah.
Which is brilliant. And then Freddie with his dry sense of humor, and Dusty with, boyfriend, come over here. And it was just great. And you could be yourself. And I think the listeners really related to that, because suddenly there was this radio station on the air that wasn't just playing to them, it was part of them. And we became their friend through the good times and the bad times.
That's when I loved K-Rock.
Yeah.
It's changed.
Alan, hey, come on.
What?
We're on the air now.
Sorry.
Richard, you give the station credit for all the bands they broke, but a lot of that, particularly with the British bands, was your love of the music that you had left back home, and the fact that your dad was still mailing you Duran Duran records and Tears for Fears records and things like that. And back then, and this is hard to believe in the 21st century, but back then, if you found a song you liked, you could play it on the radio, and you introduced K-Rock listeners to hundreds of songs just because you liked them.
Well, yeah, I would listen to them, and if they were good, I would play them. And Rick Carroll, rest his soul, he had a philosophy. He said, here's your music key, here's what you play, unless you've got something better. He said, but if you...
That's changed.
If it's not better, then you're going to answer to me. If it is better, I'm going to call you up on the hotline and say, great job. And
when there are very few guys in charge of radio that would say that.
Oh, absolutely.
And none now. None now, but very few even in history.
Yeah. Well, I do give Kevin Weatherly a lot of credit.
Too much, some would say.
No, I think...
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, of all the programmers that I've ever known and worked with, I think Rick Carroll, if he could come back from the grave, he would have picked Kevin Weatherly.
Is that right?
Kevin, I think, rescued K-Rock at a very rough period. And
I agree.
Turned
he
it
has
around.
Shepherded it through a long, long time.
Absolutely.
For sure.
He's a genius. And
I tell people this all the time, Richard. Tell me if you think I'm wrong, if I'm just being overly dramatic. But we take Kerouac for granted because it's been around since the 1970s, but there's no guarantee it's going to be around in a year or in 5 years. I mean, this business changes, and there's an economics aspect to it that is not easy in this format. And every day that Kerouac is still on the air, I think, is a miracle.
Well, I kind of agree, but I think it would be a tragedy if Kerouac went away.
Of course it would.
Because particularly as we get older, there's so many people that K-Rock is a part of their youth. I mean, it was a part of Southern California and growing up. And it's they look at it as a brother or a sister. And I do gigs all the time. I mean, Ali, you see me in the clubs.
Yeah.
I do private parties. And it's amazing how the people come up and they've all got a story. And they all love Kevin and Bean. They all say that.
Wow.
They all say, I
say
still,
that,
no, but it's true. They all say, I still listen to Kevin and Bean and, you know, but why do you play Foo Fighters so much or whatever, you know? And I always say, it's not K-Rock, it's the music. We don't make the music. We just play the music. And so
imagine if we made the music. Oh. That sounds so bad.
Hello, everybody. Wow. This is a song.
Let me read this sentence for Richard Blade's new book that's available wherever you get books. It's called World in My Eyes. And you know Richard, so you know where that title came from. But here's a line from page 435. Listeners would and continue to come up to me and say that my morning show was much better than Kevin and Bean. Thank you for that, Richard.
Carry on reading. Carry on.
Oh, but in all honesty, I have to disagree. Okay, he does. You did the morning show here at K-Rock just before we did, right?
Yeah, and then I left the morning show for about 6 months before you arrived, and someone else was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
someone who gets a very short shrift in the book, by the way. Was that on purpose?
Well, yes and no, because the book's called World in My Eyes, and I actually asked Martin Gore if I could use that title because I thought it was
Allie
perfect.
Just fainted.
Yeah, and I know it's not copyrighted, and I could have used it, but I'm really good friends with the band, so I called Martin and I said, look, here's the book, here's what it's about. It is the world in my eyes. It's the things that were important to me, and that's why there's a lot in Europe and the crazy disco days and all that kind of
and
stuff.
And you being a man whore.
And me being a man whore, yeah. And so Martin, he said, let me think about it, and I'll get back to you. The next morning, I woke up, and there was an email from him. He said, I wanted to put it in writing. I would be thrilled for you to use World in My Eyes. And it was like, wow. You know, I was blown away, because if he'd have said no, I would have not been angry at all. I would have moved on. But
you would have contacted the Cure. That I want to use here.
Yeah, Friday I'm in love.
There are so many wonderful stories about so many acts that you've been close to over the years, from Billy Idol to Morrissey to the Pet Shop Boys to George Michael. But your Depeche Mode chapter about two things mainly. One is the 101 concert at the Rose Bowl, which was one of the most unbelievable things that ever got pulled off. Nobody could believe that happened.
Right.
And the other is, and I think you know what I'm going to say, the in-store at the warehouse at the Beverly Center with 20,000 people.
Yep, you were there.
We were there.
We were briefly there. And we were running from it, but we need to take a break.
We've got to talk about that.
We will. So we'll take
Why are you a bad person?
We'll take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the time Richard started a riot.
That's a band that just played the last couple of nights at the Observatory in Santa Ana, and they're going to be there again tonight. So if you get a chance, go and see The Offspring. It's Richard Blade here at the world-famous K-Rock. Coming up in a minute, we're going to go to the phone lines. But right now, let's have a few words with Kevin and Bean and see what's going on with
Ladies
them.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is how it is done right there.
All right, when we broke, we started to talk about the in-store with Depeche Mode.
Right.
And that was when Bean – what year was that?
That was in 1990. That was to celebrate the release of Violator.
That's the year Bean and I started.
Right.
And I remember thinking, oh, this is bad. Oh, my God, this is bad. And let's get out of here. And Bean and I literally ran from that scene. Tell us about...
And it was your idea, right, Richard? The in-store.
Well, what happened was Howie Klein over at Warner Brothers said he wanted to make a statement with Depeche Mode because we'd done the Rose Bowl, we'd sold it out, and that was 2 years before, and Violator was coming. There was a huge buzz on it because Personal Jesus was the first single from that and had been released about 5 months before and became the biggest-selling 12-inch in Warner Brothers history. So they said,
wow,
this is it. Now we're in the position we could do something with Depeche Mode. So Howie and I brainstormed, and it was like, should we do a rooftop performance? And like, no, you two have done that, and the Beatles did that. That would just be a copycat. And, well, let's do another concert. No, you can't top the Rose Bowl.
Right.
And Howie said, what about an in-store? And I said, look, I did one with Billy Idol about 6 years ago at Music Plus on Vine Street. And I said, the windows nearly came in, 6,000 people showed up. I said, it was crazy. I said, if we did it with Depeche Mode now, it would be wild. And Cowie said, what would happen? I said, the streets would be closed down. It would just be ridiculous. And he goes, do you think the press would cover that? I said, of course they would cover that. Oh, I see where we're going.
They couldn't have been more upset.
And he said, do you think there'd be problems? I said, well, you know, if you were doing it with Slayer, maybe, or Winger. But I said, Depeche Mode fans aren't violent. I think they would just stand in line to meet their heroes. And he said, well, let's do that then. And that became the statement. British bands shut down L.A. streets. That was the idea. And it exceeded, of course, everyone's expectations.
Yes, well, there were 20,000 people in the streets.
Yeah, and, it was amazing.
And the problem was, Depeche Mode was awesome. They said, hey, we'll stay and meet everybody. We'll stay inside everybody. And then people started doing the math, as you point out in the book, and realized it was going to take a week for them to get through that many people. It wasn't going to happen. So they started getting kind of agitated and started banging on the windows and the whole deal. That was a scary night, Richard.
Oh, it was. And then after you guys got out, the police shut down the warehouse and nobody inside could leave for 2 hours because the streets outside, they had to make sure the streets were clear.
They had riot police, everything. Yeah. Oh, it's pretty sweet.
It was.
Richard Blade is our guest. Before we go to the calls, by the way, I want to mention again, the book is out now. It's tremendous. It's called World in My Eyes, and it's about so much more than just Richard's K-Rock years, although that's a significant part of the book with all the bands you love from here. But the stories that you tell about you being a DJ for hire, basically, spinning records for people at parties.
Yeah.
You did parties for, well, I'll let you drop some names here, Richard, because it blew my mind to see the parties that you'd done.
Well, you might not know these names because they're not K-Rock acts, but the one is Barbara Streisand. Have you heard of her?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Richard played her son's bar mitzvah.
Yeah. And Elliot Gold's son.
That's insane.
Jason.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I was doing a party for Zsa Zsa Gabor. And,
okay.
Well, that's not the big name drop.
Okay.
She was in one of the Stilt homes in the Hollywood Hills.
Right.
So she was upstairs with all the guests, including my all-time favorite actor, Money Penny. Do you think you could do this for me? Sean Connery. But I was downstairs. I didn't even have time to put that in the book, really, because I was downstairs in the game room that had all been cleared out. You know, they'd moved the billiard table and everything. I had all my DJ gear set up, my Sirwin Vegas. I was ready to go. And I'm sitting there alone, and this kid comes in, and he says, can I look through your music? I said, sure. So he's flipping through, and he pulls out Earth, Wind & Fire and Marvin Gaye, and he goes, could you play it? And I said, yeah, I can't do it too loud because the eating upstairs. So I put it on, he gets out there and he starts dancing, and I was like, wow, to be in a room with Michael Jackson watching him dance was amazing. And then I said to him, hold please.
the kid and you, the only two people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Richard Blade.
Uh-huh.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he does what?
And then I said, I got your new album. So I played a track for him from that. And he had all the moves down to that because he was working out moves to the Marvin Gaye song.
Sure.
And then he was all excited and he said, do you have a cassette player? Because that was state of the art at the time, right?
Sure.
So I said, no, I'm only streaming Spotify. So he said, I said, yeah, I got a cassette player. And he said, I'll be right back. And he ran out to his car and came back in with a cassette. And he said, we've just been working on this in the studio. And we put the cassette in. And as I said in the book, I was so blown away by watching him develop the moves. I don't know if it was Off the Wall, Rock With You, or Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, but it was one of those three songs.
So he was basically rehearsing his dance moves while you played
them. Yeah, and it was unbelievable. And I was stunned. I mean, 30 minutes, because I grew up with the Jackson 5 dancing machine, all that. The Jackson 5 were huge in England. And so, I mean, I was like Michael Jackson. And then party ended, and of course I didn't think I'd ever hear from him again. And about 5 days later I got a call from Epic Records and said, Michael asked if you would do the launch party for their Victory album and the Victory tour. So
that's unbelievable.
So I did that, and that made the front page of the Los Angeles Times.
Guys, the book is just packed with stories just like that. I mean, Richard is a Forrest Gump is what he is. He's everywhere doing everything. All right, speaking of the book, we're going to run out of time, so let's squeeze in a couple of calls real quick. Betty is on line one. She's in Woodland Hills. She has a question about The World in My Eyes, new book from Richard Blade.
Hey, Betty.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I am great, Betty. How are you doing, sweetheart?
Marge and I are doing great. We went on Amazon.com. We just purchased your book, hard copy.
Oh, thank you.
Now, how long did it take? It's not a short book.
No, it's not. It's 512 pages and lots of photos.
Did you have Did you have a ghostwriter?
No, I say that right up front. I wrote every single word.
Okay, Betty.
Wow.
How long did it take you to write this book?
It took me about 10 months, and the reason it was fairly quick to write 500 pages is because for about 10 years people have been saying, why didn't you write a book? There was a story you told on K-Rock about, and they would make me tell them that story. So the stories were very fresh.
Oh, so you had all of them sort of in your mind, yeah.
And a lot of people would say, what did you do before K-Rock? And so I would tell them, like, a little story. And Krista, my wife, happy anniversary, baby, 17 years yesterday.
Wow, congratulations.
There you go. She's 23 now. So,
we used to call her your child bride, remember?
Well, that was for our wedding present, I got her a pony. But she's as beautiful today. But so I kind of relived all these stories by telling them to people at gigs. So for me, they were fairly fresh. And then I sat down when I was getting ready to write the book. My buddy Stephen Wayne and Peter Facer, who worked with me on Video One and Video Beat, we put out all these photographs out that I've saved over the years and press cuttings. And so I was able to get literally the day and often the time of the events because I'd saved these.
Oh, things. It's remarkable. Wow. It's remarkable the memorabilia that's in the book. Hey, I got to ask real quick. Thank you for the call, Betty. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
I got to ask because you told a story in the book that I had never heard before. Even though thousands of times Kevin and I have said the world famous K-Rock, I never knew where it came from. Could you give us a short version of that story? Because I think K-Rock fans will be interested to hear the genesis of that.
We always just assume someone made it up along the way.
Well, it was a studio a bit like this, only not clean.
Okay. And this studio is clean?
And not as bright. But we were on the air. When I say we, it's not the Royal We. It was Raimondo and The Blade.
Okay.
And I'd just been interviewing Tim Ferriss and Michael Hutchins the day before at LA Zoo for MV3, which was a TV show I was doing. And so
the guys from INXS, for folks who don't recognize
INXS, yeah, absolutely. And so they came in on the radio show. And they were so tired. I mean, they were just dragging. And Raymond thought that they didn't want to be there, but they were just tired, jet-lagged from Australia, and they'd been doing the interviews all day on TV the day before. And so Raymond was joking with them, oh, you don't want to be here at K-Rock. And they said, no, you're wrong, mate. We really want to be here. This was our number one place to come in America. And Raymond goes, yeah, right. And you don't know us about us. And he said, no, everyone knows about you in Australia. And Raymond said, well, you can't even get K-Rock in Irvine, so never mind.
Right.
In Australia.
Such a terrible signal.
Yeah, and Michael Hutchins looked across the board like I'm looking at you, and he goes, no, mate, you're wrong. You're the world-famous K-Rock.
Michael Hutchins came up with that.
That's where it came from. And
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And somebody heard that and said, ooh, let's start using that. That's good.
We saved it on a cassette. We had it on a cassette, and the first few drops were times we would play it would be, you're the world-famous K-Rock, mate. And it was great. And it all goes back to the late, great Michael Hutchins. And coming up on November 22nd, 20 years since we've lost him.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my first big girl concert.
It XS
Kick Tour, yeah.
Yeah.
How about that? Are you surprised, Richard, that it is stuck, that we are still calling ourselves the world-famous K-Rock? Because it's less true now than it was then.
No, I think you are underestimating it. I mean, for any band coming to America from England, you've got to play K-Rock. I mean, if you don't play K-Rock, then it's a huge miss for their career. I mean, whether it's Oasis or whether it's Spandau Ballet, it all goes back to K-Rock. So, I mean, you guys deserve, you know, credit.
Don't look at us and tell us.
Can I read you one passage that you guys have mentioned in?
Sure. Yes, but then we got to go. I'm sorry to say, Richard.
Absolutely.
Out of time.
Absolutely. But this is, I wrote this. This is on page 375. I wrote, Kevin and Bean started a new era for the morning program on January the 2nd, 1990. With their arrival, the 80s on K-Rock officially ended. The big hair, checkerboard vans, vibrant colors, and free sex of the previous decade disappeared.
Oh, we came at the wrong time.
I know. That's where we're going. And was replaced by plaid shirts, torn jeans, grunge music, and the increasing fear of AIDS. And I can't help feel that the great Kevin and Bean got the raw end of that deal.
We don't feel that way. We feel like we're lucky to have ever been here.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I thought, we'll get fired, but I'll be able to say that I worked at K-Rock. That's all I could dream of.
Wow.
Guys, the book is wonderful, and it's available now. The website is richardbladebook.com. You can order it on Amazon. You can buy it in stores. It's called World in My Eyes, and I can't recommend it more highly. You can listen to Richard on Sirius XM on First Wave and every weekday at noon on the Flashback Lunch on our sister station, 93.1 Jack FM.
Thank you so much.
Blade, just say you're the best, man.
Yes.
just hit national bestseller.
We're trying to say goodbye.
Let him say this because he's so humbled. Get this out because it's amazing.
I'm so excited. As we were starting this, Bean, the publisher texted me, and I showed Kevin and Ali. We just hit number one on the national bestseller list in two categories.
Come on.
So thank you so much. National bestseller. So the book will probably be withdrawn in about 48 hours. No, just to be reprinted with national bestseller.
You offered to send us one, but I'm going to buy one. I don't want you to give me a free one. I'm going to buy one.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming in.
Linkin Park, 21 Pilots, and The Offspring in honor of birthday boy Noodles, all coming up this hour on The Kevin and Bean Show. And we're going to make some time for your telephone calls, too, for Kevin Bean's What's Good. Should we open up the phones right now?
We can, sure.
People want to call? On any topic, if you've got something on your mind that we are not discussing that you think we should be, or if you've got a question or comment about the show or something in the news, or you want to talk Super Bowl, whatever it is, you can give us a call. Kevin and Bean's What's Good right now at 1-800-520-1067. All right. I got a great story for you guys. I'm trying to think, Kevin, if this has happened to us. Have we ever been involved in a broadcast where we started laughing uncontrollably at a very inappropriate time?
Wow. Yeah, a lot, but I don't know that it came through a lot of the time.
I can't think of that happening to us, but it's pretty common.
You mean at an inopportune time when it's the worst thing you can do?
Yeah. Yes, that when it's not a funny thing that you're talking about, but for whatever reason, something that might have happened off the air or something that happened earlier, you just get the giggles. How about you, Ali? Did that ever happen to you in all the years you were on TV?
Luckily, I did the fun features, so it was never serious news. But there have been situations where I call them the church giggles, where you should not be laughing, and then it makes you laugh more. And then you've heard my laugh.
Then,
it's like a seal being clubbed. It's just not good.
And, of course, it happens to people who aren't who are broadcasting too, just people, you know, sitting around the table and something awful is going on, but for whatever reason something catches you. Well, this is a lady who was on TV. She is part of the Channel 3 News in New Zealand. Paul Henry is the main presenter on that show, and she is Hilary Berry, and she does the news. And she is coming out of a story about a guy, a serious story, by the way, a guy who was convicted of stalking a woman by going into her house and pooping on her floor. Okay?
Oh no.
And
wait, that's considered stalking?
Yes, in this case it was. So you're going to hear the report in the field of what's going on with the guy, and then you're going to hear her reaction to it and how unfortunate the next story is that she then tries to read on the air.
Oh, no.
It's no bueno.
Diplomat Mohammed Rizalman will be sentenced today at the High Court in Wellington on an indecent assault charge. Rizalman pleaded guilty, but there were still disputed facts over why he followed Tanya Billingsley home. Emily Cooper reports.
Mohammed Rizalman once had an untainted two-decade-long career in the Malaysian military. Today, he'll be sentenced for indecent assault. In November, he admitted following then-21-year-old Tanya Billingsley home. He said he'd had an emergency defecation situation and needed to use her bathroom, but the judge in the case found he had a sexual motive.
Okay, so he's claiming the fear. He's claiming emergency defecation situation.
Which is good. Great band.
The judge disagreed, by the way, and considered it assault on the woman and said that he was doing it. He showed up at her house with no pants on, okay, to make this
check.
Okay,
well.
All right. So now the newsreader, now Hilary Berry, is coming out. She's heard about the emergency defecation situation and loses it.
An emergency defecation situation.
Anyway, carry on, Hilary.
I think I'm having one myself.
All right, so I think I'm having one myself. She's losing it. But now she realizes I'm on live TV. I still got to read the news.
I'm next, right.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next story going to be?
Because this next story is so tragic, I cannot be laughing. Right. Investigators believe a bomb caused the explosion on a plane which has just taken off from the Somali capital of Mogadishu. The blast blew a hole in the side of the plane, and one of the 74 passengers on board was sucked out, which is terrible. And I'm not laughing at that. As the plane was at relatively low altitude, there was no violent decompression and it held together. No one is responsible.
She's talking about a guy getting sucked out of an airplane. Maybe you saw the pictures on
that
the internet this week about
a week ago or something, right?
This it would have like 2 days ago.
2 days
that,
ago.
That Somalia plane that has the hole in the side of it. A guy was sucked out of it, right?
Oh, man.
But she's coming on after the emergency defecation situation. So, by the way, we're playing the Troom Friday night. You really should try to see them. And she cannot hold it together. She's reading the story. And she knows how bad it is.
Oh,
I mean, she even says, I can't be laughing at this story, but she can't stop.
Today could be the day I lose my job. Still, I'd get to Lyon. Right. Severe storms are again hitting the United States.
So then she recovers and she moves on. But I can't. I mean, look. Right, Anderson? You know what it's like. Sometimes.
Anderson? Right.
All right. That's right, Anderson.
Sure.
All right. Pull it together.
All right, we're going to take some calls next for Kevin Beans. What's good?
Call on any topic, 1-800-520-1067. Come on, Anderson. Be professional. Psych, the movie, you guys, is on TV. I should have looked. A couple days.
We'll wait.
I think.
Thursday.
I don't remember. It's coming up this week, though.
It's on Thursday.
Thursday night, thank you. Psych, the movie, the return of the show that we all love. James Rodet, who co-writes and co-stars in the movie, joins us later on this morning here on The Kevin Bean Show. First, though, Allie, you brought up something interesting, which is kids' letters to Santa sometimes. Kids are dicks, right? That's our takeaway
sometimes.
Here.
I don't think that's the takeaway. It might be for some of these that I'm about to read, but...
I was thinking about this. I was watching the Charlie Brown Christmas special though over the weekend, as I do every year, and I loved it, and it's great, and it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's
terrible, but go ahead.
And Sally is shaking down Santa. If you recall, her letter to Santa is just, hey, just send me lots of 10s and 20s. I just want it in cash this year.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking, I bet kids are greedy little pigs.
Wow. I would like to talk, to people who have the unfortunate job of playing Santa. Because that has to suck if you're a mall Santa or something.
Oh, a mall Santa, yeah. Because there's only one Santa in the North Pole, so he needs people in different areas to play him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right, good work.
You're welcome.
Nice cover. So what'd you find out about letters to Santa?
Well, I saw this letter to Santa yesterday that was posted, and it led me down a deep dive. Let me just read this one to you. It was posted online by a woman named Sarah McCammon, and she works for NPR. And she said, my 6-year-old Santa skeptic was told to write a letter to Santa at school. So he did. She posted his letter. Dear Santa, I'm only doing this for class. I know your naughty list is empty. I know your good list is empty. And your life is empty. You don't know the trouble I've had in my life. Goodbye. Love, I'm not telling you my name. He doesn't have to. He knows your name.
He doesn't understand Santa.
He doesn't get it, this kid. So I read that and laughed so hard.
That's awesome.
At how somewhat threatening he was. And I thought, what are some other letters to Santa that have been posted online? How deep do they go into the psyche of these children?
Right.
So here I have for you one that's a lot like mine that I sent every year.
You sent the same one every year?
Asking
you wrote to Santa
for a pony.
But when will you stop doing that?
Maybe 2020.
Okay.
But this child, maybe it took the right course, be a little threatening. Dear Santa, you better bring my pony this year or there will be consequences. Oh, my God. I mean, ridiculous. Next up, dear Santa, how are you? Well, enough chit-chat. Let's get down to business. And then the kid lists all the things that he or she wants. Unbelievable.
I respect that because that is appreciative of how busy Santa is this time of year.
Exactly.
Don't waste his time with, hey, how you doing?
That
just
is
get
true.
Right to it.
Enough chit-chat.
Right?
Okay. This kid just wanted to make Santa chuckle. Santa, I just wanted you to know, I love big butts and I cannot lie. That's just what I wanted you to know. And that's it. That's all he wrote in the letter.
That's awesome.
And then this kid is clearly all about 2017. Dear Santa, please text my dad. He has my whole list. I love you. Unbelievable.
I don't have the time to sit down and write out a list of things I
Listen,
want.
Listen, he's got it. Just, you know him. He knows you. Just get to it. This one, this kid's just sick of being a kid.
Dear Santa, I wanted to tell you that I'm fine. I don't know, but if you could turn me possibly into a dragon, please, or a pet dragon, either one will do, though I would like it if you could make me turn into a dragon. P.S. Have a happy Valentine's Day. So this kid wrote
what?
Far in advance, no, just so Santa would be able to get this done.
It takes a lot of planning to turn a kid into a dragon.
Absolutely.
I wasn't even aware that was something that Santa offered.
I know. Let's see if you can figure out maybe where this kid is coming from politically.
Okay. Oh, no.
All I want for Christmas is peace and a job for my daddy. I'm a big boy and I don't want any toys. Mommy said you're not going to come to my house this year because Obama got elected again.
Lord. Come on. Why would a mom tell her kid that?
Well, he's probably old enough to know the truth, Kevin. That's why.
Come on.
And then flip side. Dear Santa, I've got a great idea. On Christmas, when you're in everyone's house, you could take all the guns and put them in your sack and hide them at the North Pole. And then no one would kill anyone anymore in the world. Thank Aww. You.
That's a lot of work for Santa.
Though, right? I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot. And then finally, let's hope this kid gets a puppy, because he needs some love.
Oh, no.
Dear Santa, I want you to know that I want a puppy. And you're fat. You're not alive. You're fat and stupid. Riley. Holy crap with these kids. I now want children.
So he's fat and not alive?
And stupid. Just stupid. And by the way, S-T-U-P-E-D, which I love this kid.
Who's even now, Riley? Craigslist. Pretty good idea, by the way, that a man named Craig Newmark had back in 1995, where he realized the power of the internet could be used for classified ads. And in case you're wondering why so many newspapers have gone out of business, like half or more in this country in the last 20 years, it's because of Craigslist. It's because that's how newspapers used to make their money, is through classifieds.
Oh.
So, in case you're wondering, 60 million Craigslist users as of late November 2016, 50 billion page views per month.
Wow. 13,
it's in 13 languages, over a million job listings.
Am I the only person that looked at Craigslist maybe 3 years ago and said, nope, all scam, not going?
Yes, you are the only person. Lots of people use Craigslist for lots of different things, and it's not just buying and selling things. It's a very popular destination for dating. There are topic discussions, like on Reddit. There's lots of forums, over 100 forums of various topics. So a lot of people are using Craigslist for a lot of things. Now, that's not to say, Kevin, that it's not always a good idea to keep in the back of your mind, hey, just like you would with anything else, keep my antenna up, make sure I'm not being ripped off, of course.
Yeah, I had three friends that tried to go to the Kings of Leon concert at the Forum on Saturday night, and they said, hey, they texted me, hey, we bought some tickets on Craigslist, and they're fake. And my response was, that's what you get for going on Craigslist.
Right.
What am I supposed to do? Like, I can help them. I was like, sorry. Yeah. You should buy them from someplace else next time.
Yeah. I mean, look, we all know that counterfeit tickets are a problem, and they're a problem wherever you buy your tickets. If you're not buying it from the authorized distributor, you run the risk of that being the case. Yeah.
My
but I bet that happens a lot.
My friend's husband bought World Series tickets to the Cardinals and had three tickets, one for him, one for his son, one for his daughter. Got dressed up. Things were great. Went to the game. Turned away at the gate, and my friend was not the loving wife that she probably could have been at that moment. She's just like, you sucker! I told you! Not good. But then again, it's the Cardinals, and he's a Cardinals fan. So
who cares, right?
And I think there's no, I hear the Cardinals are the only team that plays baseball the right way. That's what I hear.
That's what they tell you.
The thing about Craigslist is you'll never see that person again. There's no recourse.
Right.
If you buy those tickets, you hand over your cash and you get the counterfeit tickets. It's not like you can go, you know, like if they had gone through a newspaper and they would have contact information that's legitimate on this person. I mean, they're in the wind, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Craigslist is so effective for that. And by the way, the reason we're bringing all this up is we want to take your phone calls on bad. We're just looking for bad things that have happened on Craigslist.
Yes, disasters. Right?
You bought something that didn't work out. You met someone that didn't work out. We want to hear how Craigslist failed you. You thought it was a good idea, seemed cool. Not so much. That's the topic at 1-800-520-1067. And Kevin, I understand there's another story in the news that kind of proves your point. Be real careful on that site.
Yeah, it's out of Washington. Hard to imagine.
Hard to imagine. This is a Seattle suburb where this happened.
All serial killers go to Washington. That's where they live.
We do have our fair share over the years, yes.
A Washington woman who met a date from Craigslist at a motel on Tuesday asked him if he's a serial killer.
All right.
Are you a serial killer?
Let me stop you right there.
Okay.
We always talk about the situations in your life where things are going great. You couldn't be happier.
Right.
And then the next minute, you are like, what have I gotten myself into? Because this guy meets this woman on Craigslist. Next thing he knows, they're at the door of the motel. He's thinking, this couldn't be going any better.
And then she says, are you a murderer? What about the fact, are you a serial killer? Are you a murderer? She kept asking him.
Yeah.
Now, how many times does she have to ask before you're out? Because to me, the second time she asked that, I'm gone.
Two's your limit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and Allie, one's legit, right?
One's legit, then maybe another one, like, you sure?
I don't know if it's legit, because if they're a serial killer, I mean, honestly, are they going to go, you got me?
Right. Sorry. That's true. That's very true.
You could go, you got me.
Yeah. But I think after two.
After two, now I'm scared of her.
Yeah. A little bit.
So apparently he said, I'm not a killer. I'm not a murderer.
Right.
And then she said, oh, interesting. I am.
Yeah!
Grabbed a knife, jumped on him, and started stabbing him.
Oh,
what?
God.
Yep. Finally, he was able to call police, and he was brought to the medical center where he's in satisfactory condition. So she's not a very effective serial killer.
Well, she punctured his lung, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
Police then found the woman with a knife in her pocket in the parking lot where she confessed that she planned to eat her date's heart.
Oh, my God.
That was her plan. And they said, why? And she said, and I quote, I'm a loon. That's what she told the police.
See, maybe she was just asking him if he was a killer, so he would then ask her, and she'd be like, yeah.
That was a whole setup?
She just wanted to chat about it.
And that son of a bitch wouldn't just, he was like,
he
no.
He wouldn't give it to her.
No, I'm not.
Hey, guys, ask me.
Why are you always talking about you? Ask me some stuff.
There's a lot of weird foreplay going on in the world here, and I think this was just her thing. By the way, the man was, and I don't know if this is true or if it even matters, but he said, I met the woman on Craigslist in an ad for dating, not for sex. And I don't know if he was just worried about his reputation at that point. He didn't want people to think he was just
trolling. Alive, like it matters.
He's alive, like it matters, exactly. So that, I mean, I think if he were listening, I think he would have a legitimate complaint about Craigslist. I think Craigslist did not serve him well.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see what you've got to say at 1-800-520-1067. You used the Craigslist, and what went wrong is the topic. Let's go to Montebello, line one. This is going to be Tom up bright and early. Tom, what happened on Craigslist, dude?
Hey, guys. So I got like a 5-year-old little brother who loves wrestling, and he loves the figures. And so on the ad, he had a bunch of figures this guy was selling. My brother liked those certain ones, so I went over, contacted the guy, bought about half of them for about $25. They all were looking good in the package. I brought them home. Within about half an hour, my little brother started playing with the arms, and they all fell out of the sockets.
Oh no.
Yeah. And I tried calling the guy back. He wouldn't respond. I called his house. His father goes, he's not here right now. I tried for a week to get a hold of this guy. I went back to the house. He wasn't around. They said I was harassing them. I filed it on Craigslist. I get a response back from another guy who said, the same guy tried to sell him a fake championship belt that he said was like a kid size.
Right.
Turned out to be a really fake imitation. And he got scammed out too.
You don't exactly get a warranty when you go over to a guy's house and buy toys, you know?
Yeah, I know.
All right. Good. At least it was only $25. Thanks for the call. Appreciate that.
I hope it was Roman Reigns, though. He's with me.
You hope his arms fall off for real.
Just janky Roman Reigns.
Let's go to HB. Let's talk to Jody. She's on line 4. She's got an interesting story about Craigslist gone wrong.
Hey, Jody.
Hello.
Hello.
So, I'm a huge Radiohead fan, and my husband was so sweet. He got tickets to see them at the Greek. He arranged for a limo. I'm all dolled up, and we get up there, and go to try to get into the show, and we were told that they were not legitimate tickets, and I'm in the bathroom crying, and he's at the ticket box office trying to find any way to get us in. Somebody affiliated with the band overheard his story. She wanted to see the tickets, and I can't even believe this happened. I'm such a lucky person. She gave us tickets to get in.
Are you kidding? Wow. You're so lucky.
I know. they weren't together, but it didn't matter.
Who cares?
That's so cool.
That's awesome. Oh, wow. Radiohead.
I know. I'm super, super lucky. I'm also one of the lucky a-holes that won a trip from you guys. I got to see Coldplay in London.
Oh, my God.
You are charmed.
Jody.
Man, I want to hang out with you, Jody. Right? You start buying my lottery tickets.
Good things happen.
All right, Jody.
You should.
Glad there was a happy ending. Thank you for the call. Sharon, Ivan, Justin, Nick, you guys hang up. Hang on. Don't hang up. Whatever you do, don't hang up. Hang on. Let me take your calls next right after this on K-Rock. A man in the Seattle, Washington suburb of Linwood thought he met a nice young lady on Craigslist. Got lucky enough to take her to the motel.
Sure.
Before she told him that she was a serial killer and stabbed him in the lung. That didn't work out. That's not the ending he was looking for that date.
I mean, so I guess not.
Got us to thinking that it might be time to do Craigslist disasters here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Juan writes in, I've bought marijuana in Toronto and Chicago from Craigslist. The key is being able to filter out the scam artists.
See, that's the problem, is there's so many scam artists. How do you do that? How do you filter them out?
You ask.
Well, Chris, hey, are you mm-hmm. a scammer?
Yeah.
Is this really spinach you're selling me? Chris writes, I had a buddy who went to buy a big screen TV, and when he got there, they pulled a gun, pistol whipped him, stole his money and his car.
Oh my God.
That's not the same as getting a new TV. Let's go to Nick. He's a police officer on line 6. He's in Los Angeles. He's probably heard a lot of Craigslist stories, and I'm grateful that he's listening and he's calling. Hey Nick, what's going on, man?
Hey party people, what's going on?
You tell us. Is this career you get a lot of Craigslist gone wrong business in your line of work?
In the last year I have, I work near a college campus and they use it a lot for meetups. And okay. About a year ago, we got a call that someone near our parking lot got held at gunpoint for a phone that he was buying. And they actually stole the phone and all the money that he – or they stole all the money that he brought with him to buy the phone. It was about like
$1,200. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
another
who's
time
buying
happened,
a phone for $1,200?
It was when the new iPhone came out.
So what?
So yeah. Maybe there weren't enough.
Then, wow.
And then another time, same thing, a guy went to go buy a phone, or he went to go sell a phone, and these two guys rolled up in a car. They grabbed the phone from him and tried to take off, and this guy decided he was going to hang on the window and get drugged for about 200-300 yards.
Oh, that sounds like a great plan.
Yeah. worked out well.
I have heard people suggest that if you need to meet a stranger for some sort of business and you have some concerns, meet in the parking lot of a police station. Is that allowed, Nick? Yeah. Can people do that?
Yes, yes. The police station is a public area. You can meet there. We recommend meeting in any public area, like a gas station or a 7-Eleven, places that do have cameras in case things go
wrong.
Would
you say don't go to Craigslist?
I would say, I mean, I've used it in the past, never for anything expensive, but I mean,
just
I would
dominatrix,
honestly just use
stuff
Amazon
like that.
Or eBay. Amazon and eBay are pretty certified.
Okay, Amazon right, or eBay. Gotcha. Okay. All right, officer, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for calling. Appreciate that. Let's go to Justin, line 4. He's in Huntington Beach. I think he's got a great house rental story on Craigslist for us.
I'm sorry, line 3, you mean?
Justin,
Huntington Beach. Hi there.
Hey, guys. How's it going, man?
It's going well. You tell us about Craigslist.
Now, after listening to everybody else, I feel like a complete moron, that's for sure.
Justin, I got to be honest. I'm looking at your story. You should have felt like a moron before now.
Yeah, I did.
Okay,
and
go ahead.
It's been a while.
Tell us what happened.
Responded to an ad for a rental for a house in Midway City. Showed up to the house with my wife. Walked it twice. Filled out rental paperwork. Gave them money. Turned out it wasn't even the guy's house and took me and my family for $3,000.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Me and my kids showed up with the moving truck loaded with all my stuff.
Oh, my God.
When we arrived, there was 3 other families there that were supposed to be renting the house as well.
That's unbelievable. How do you
suppose... What's the room for all 3 families then?
Put them on the phone.
How do you suppose the scammer had access to that house? Like, how did he get in that house to be able to show it to you and other families?
He was an old tenant.
Oh, and he knew it was empty, so he just put in an ad and then just met you there at the time with his key and let himself in.
Absolutely. It ended up pretty well, though, man. I got a couple friends together. We ended up taking him down and turning him over to the sheriff's department. He went down for 25 families.
No way. You know, right up until that point when you told me how that story ended, I was thinking that sounds like a pretty good idea and I was going to get into that business.
I was thinking, I want to be that guy that starts renting out a house that's not mine.
No.
Wow. I think you should go for it, Bean.
All right, Justin, thank you so much. Wow. Appreciate that. That's fantastic.
Man,
all right, let's see.
By fantastic, you mean horrible.
I mean, yeah, really, really sad. All right, let's go to Mike in Van Nuys. He's on line 8. He's up next. I think he's got another rental. We're doing Craigslist disasters here on the Kevin and Bean Show. If you want to join us, 1-800-520-1067. Mike, what happened?
So basically, I was looking for someone to rent out one of the rooms in my apartment, and I found a couple, and they seemed really nice. I interviewed him. He was a drummer. I was a drummer. His girlfriend was cool. And after about 2 days, they said that they found bed bugs in their room, which was absolutely not true.
Right.
I went in there. I got an exterminator to check it out. They didn't find anything. A couple days go by. They ended up scamming me and getting their rent back completely for that entire month.
Oh.
And totally took advantage of me like that.
So were they just doing it so they could live rent-free for a few days?
No, they wanted to get away with the entire month. I wouldn't let that happen. So in that terms, I actually took advantage of that. But they ended up getting all their rent back after about, I'd say, about 4 days. And they paid everything up front. So they ended up living rent-free for 4 days on top of
that's a lot of hassle.
That's a lot of work to go to for 4 days, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
It was total bullcrap, though. There was absolutely no bed bugs in there. Like,
right.
It was a whole thing that they had, and they really, it was just like lie after lie after lie. So,
drummers, gotcha. Right?
Drummers.
Yeah, right? That's what are you going to do?
That's my takeaway. All right, let's do one more. Let's do Sharon in Long Beach. He's on line one. I think, if I'm reading this correctly, this one might have a happy ending.
Hey, Sharon.
Hey, how you doing?
We are good. Craigslist disasters is what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, this is funny. I my son couldn't go with me to pick up some college books for him, so he asked me to show up at a Starbucks and buy 3 books. When I got there, I thumbed through them really quickly to make sure there wasn't any highlight. They looked really good, so bought the books and brought them back to my son. And I don't know if it was that day, but we were going through the books, or he was going through the books, and in the back of one of the books was cut out the guy's stash with a pipe and assorted drugs.
Yeah!
And you didn't have to pay anything extra for that? That was just a free bonus?
Wow.
No.
Craigslist is good.
We don't do drugs, so, you know, we flush the drugs, but my son did ask if he could keep the pipe, and I was thinking, and I'm like, but the best part was...
Wait, did you let him keep the pipe?
No, I
didn't.
Let
him keep the pipe.
Sharon, for a while.
He needs a pipe.
Get off my phone.
All right, let's go to Nepal for this next story, you guys. I don't know if you've seen this viral video. What? Why are you laughing, King of Mexico?
Hello, Nepal.
Nepal. A British tourist who is a teacher named Gemma Wilson, 35 years old, and her stepson Charlie are trekking about the mountains of Nepal, and they stop to get a cup of tea, because that's what you do when you're a Brit, right?
Right.
So they get a cup of tea, and her son gets some black tea, and the woman who's running the little tea stand there charges him 150 rupees for the tea. That's what she says the cost of the tea is.
Right.
And the lady pays it. But the lady is confused and concerned and is a little bit worried, as tourists often are, that she's getting ripped off, because she's been apparently buying tea in the country, and it's been about 50 rupees, and now all of a sudden it's 150 rupees.
Right.
Now... you guys did a little math yesterday when we saw this story after the show. What are we talking about when we're doing conversions from rupees into something we might understand?
I think
like
it's
dollars.
Around a buck.
150 rupees is one British pound.
So
one British pound. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So is that a lot? Is that an extortion? Is this surge pricing? What are we looking at for a cup of tea? Is that considered too much? Is she being ripped off?
I mean, she felt like she was, because she was buying it for 50 everywhere else.
Uh-huh.
And then it's three times that.
But is everywhere else not on the side of a mountain where exactly. they have to bring yeah. it up with
it's
donkeys?
It's Nepal. I don't know.
Yes.
I need exact answer.
I see.
Okay. And Ali, you bring up an outstanding point, because that's something I don't know in this story. And I think that is important context, because mm-hmm. maybe she is someplace miles and miles and miles and miles away from the center of town, where it's a great effort to build a tea stand and to supply a tea stand. All right. We say all that to say this. The reason this video goes viral is the lady makes a comment about, hey, that sounds like a lot for a cup of tea. And then she goes outside. She does pay it. She goes outside, and she's trying to take a picture of the tea stand. Now, I don't know if her intention is then to put that up on Facebook and shame them for ripping her off or whatever. But the owner behind the counter at the tea shop is furious and comes after her and starts to attack her. And I think shortly after that, Kevin, she runs away. And shortly after that, that's when she turns on her GoPro of this Nepalese woman who's chasing her up a mountain to the point where this British lady is just exhausted and is just and practically breaks down.
So it's time for Who's the Dick? The woman that was running the tea shop was throwing rocks, which you know I approve. And was chasing her, and she was so out of breath. Here's some of the tape, and then I'll give you some translation of what the Nepalese, did I say it?
Yes.
Tea shop owner is saying. She's got a backpack, this British woman. She's literally running through the mountains away from a tea shop owner.
Just leave me alone. Please. Listen. Please. Please.
I can't. Okay, now she can't run any longer, but the woman's still coming after her. And throwing rocks, and she's got two giant sticks that it seemed like they're sort of formed into swords, but they're not really. It's just two giant pieces of wood.
And this is a Nepalese lady. Looks like she's elderly, doesn't she?
Yeah, but she looks like she could track you down for days.
She's elderly, but she's mean.
In great shape and mean. Yes, both.
Please, I'm sorry, please. I'm sorry, please.
Okay. Okay, so now she's yelling stuff like, everybody comes to DePaul, nobody's special, you English people are rich.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think you get a special deal? She's yelling all of this stuff at the woman. The woman is just saying, I'm sorry, please leave me alone.
And the woman did pay for the tea. It's not like she was outraged and left without leaving the money. She did pay for it, but she made a comment about it.
Yeah, but she also tried to bargain, and that's what we're missing in the story is,
but hold on. She didn't try to bargain before she paid for it, though. She paid for it, and then she said, wow, that seems expensive.
Well, we don't know that. The story says it's from her side only.
Okay.
So in the video, you could hear the lady, and you're going to get to it when she's saying, you want bargain.
Right.
You know, so it sounds like she tried to bargain down the
high price of
150 rupees.
Let me ask you this, Dad. Is there some rule against bargaining? I mean, is that not allowed anymore?
I can understand from her standpoint, tourists come through, and they're just trying to make a living, and they're probably not making a tremendous amount of...
You know, like...
What?
That is their
That's
living.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that's probably not a lot of making money doing it that way. So if rich tourists come through, sure. If rich tourists come through and try to haggle the price,
but are you really trying to haggle for tea? No, you haggle for goods, not for items, for souvenirs.
According to this woman,
you don't haggle for tea or food or any of that. When you're traveling, you don't do that.
Okay, so ugly British tourist. Okay,
I will say this: this was not the woman from Nepal's first rodeo.
Right?
No,
she did snap just because of this one woman.
Girl.
This seems like decades.
This is a life of
anger about people coming to her little mountain village and being like, I'm not paying that.
My whole dollar. My whole pound.
Because who tracks someone down? I mean, she's chasing this woman through the mountains.
She's angry.
Sorry. I'm sorry, please.
You British people are rich.
No.
You special? Huh?
I'm sorry. Please.
And now she's like putting the wood at her, like she's gonna stab her.
This video, by the way, is a little bit terrifying. It sounds like a horror movie when you listen to how scared this woman is, and she's on the side of a mountain on a tiny little path. And I'm sure the biggest thing on her mind right now is, don't push me off this cliff.
Right. So who's the dick? I think maybe the British woman.
I'm thinking British woman.
So far,
yes.
Now that they're 3/4 of a mile away from the shop, starting to turn. Because the woman that owns the tea shop is threatening her. And she keeps apologizing as much as she can. And this is not going to dissuade, like Ali said, the lifelong frustration of this woman.
Please. My son is watching.
Your son, no problem. You.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Stick it to her, Nepalese woman.
And to be fair, your son jetted the hell out of
there. He's way gone.
He's not four.
He's 15.
No.
He's already on the plane back to Britain.
Please. I've said I'm sorry.
You bargain.
I'm sorry. Listen.
Discount.
I'm sorry, no, please. Please. Please stop. I know.
Okay, all right. It's your mountain. Fine. Leave me alone. I'm apologizing. What does this woman have to do?
Yeah, there's nothing.
I would have broken out more rupees and just said, here, yeah. Sorry for being a privileged British woman that probably paid thousands of dollars to come on this trip, and I'm haggling with you for freaking tea.
Right. So in my point, right. In my opinion, you're right. Mm-hmm. Until they get a mile away from the goddamn tea shop.
She's
threatening to stab her.
Absolutely.
What's happening?
It turned into a two-dick situation.
What?
I'm sorry. Please, I'm sorry. Please, no, it's not. It's okay. I'm sorry.
White bargain, white bargain.
You're scaring my son.
Okay, now this is my favorite part. You people are dog.
Mm-hmm. You're scaring my son.
You people are donkey.
Okay.
Please stop.
You people are cow.
Scaring my son, please.
You people are dog.
I need to be with my son. Please, can I just go? Please, can I go? Please.
You crazy woman, you. She's yelling at the British woman for being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, this is no different than a road rage situation of people just getting out of control, losing their mind. And after the fact, I think both of them would say they probably handled it poorly.
No, I'm going to say that the shop owner taught this girl a lesson.
I'm going to say that the British tourist was a dick for a minute.
Still, I think always.
And then running and apologizing while the woman is threatening to stab her with this piece of wood.
An apology for trying to rip off a lady for her.
Right,
her
but how many times does she have to say she's sorry, and does she deserve to be chased through the mountains
like
in
Allie
the fall?
Said, just make it rain your rupees or whatever. That'll solve everything.
I'm just going to say this. I'm happy it wasn't an American. That's it.
Same. So, British woman...
Is
a dick at the beginning.
Nope. All the way through.
I'm going beginning.
All the way through.
Nepalese woman. Holy crap. I don't know if you heard on Friday, we were playing some tape of Alex Jones from Infowars.com.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who believes in every conspiracy that anyone makes up ever.
Yeah, Newtown, all those kids that were killed, those were all actors.
Actors, right. Of course, 9/11. Inside job, the whole thing. I mean, he's just whatever
despicable.
Whatever comes along, he will wholeheartedly believe in. But he took it even a step further. I've never heard anyone claim that a president was being poisoned, let alone all presidents are being poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what Alex Jones came up with.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was told this by high-level sources, and it was evident, and especially after Reagan was shot in his first year in office when he was acting like Trump and doing the right things, that he never really recovered. They gave him cold blood and his transfusion that causes brain damage.
Did you know any of that? Did you know they gave him cold blood?
I didn't. And I would think you'd notice as a president that you're getting a blood transfusion, but...
They slowly gave him small amounts of sedatives. It's known that most presidents end up getting drugged.
Okay, is that known?
Nope.
Okay.
Small dosages of sedatives till they build it up. Trump's such a bull, he hasn't fully understood it yet, but I've talked to people, multiple ones, and they believe that they are putting a slow sedative that they're building up that's also addictive in his Diet Cokes.
Did you know that?
No, but it makes sense because he loves Diet Coke.
Right?
Yeah.
So I thought we would check in with Alex Jones just to see if there's any clarification on that. Alex, good morning.
You seem shocked by the truth, as if you're not even aware of what's happening around you.
Well, I mean, I feel
startling
like...
startling to me that you could be so obtuse.
I feel like people watch the president's health, all of the president's health, very, very closely.
Who's watching the president's health? Are you watching the president's health?
Well, no, but I'm not a doctor.
Well, you have to keep in mind that these people are constantly surrounded by a group of deep state operatives that are working inside the White House and the government in general, and they are constantly affecting and poisoning this man throughout his daily behavior. So who is watching him if the ones around him are actually the ones who are doing the attacking?
So you mean that Obama was drugged, Bush was drugged, everybody?
I told you, it's well known that they all get drugged. All presidents get drugged throughout the course of their administration.
That's the first time I've heard of it. I don't know that it's well known.
They all get drugged,
okay.
And their sphincters are replaced with plexiglass. We all know
this.
Wait, what?
They're given a plexiglass tube in place of their sphincter.
Why?
We all know this. Because it's the only way they can ensure that every president is able to keep the secrets of the state, like the fact that all of the Uber drivers now are actually hawks in human disguise. We can't have these facts come out. It would just terrify the populace. They'd be running in the street. They would be attacking and looting because they would know the truth, like all pillows are filled with Lady Gaga's underarm shavings.
What?
Oh,
exactly. That's if you
gross.
Knew that, you'd be furious.
I don't want to use my pillow.
Right? That's true.
Right. We'd be a bunch of just somnambulists just walking around having had no sleep. And it's starting everyone, all the public figures slowly are being replaced with brand new body parts. They're swapping everything out. Selena Gomez, as we all know, just had a kidney from a beluga whale that was put inside her.
No, it's her best friend.
Part of this hybrid program they have, the turning of pop star, water mammal, a hybrid program. Well, they're going to have them take over. We know Hillary Clinton has been seen wandering the halls and the aisles of the Whole Foods, injecting papayas with Windex. We know this to be true. And we know the cast of MASH is slowly abducting all the elderly people, making them crochet rocket cozies for North Korea.
Why MASH? You know all of that.
Alan Alda is a North Korean sympathizer. That's well known. That's well known.
That's not.
Tell you how you can win those Morrissey tickets for this weekend at the Hollywood Bowl coming up in 5 minutes. Give you a chance to call in. First, though, two questions for you guys.
Yes.
Number one is, would you ever honk your horn at a police car in front of you at an intersection if the light were green and the police officer did not go?
Are his lights on?
His lights are not on.
Yeah.
You would honk at a police officer.
I would give him a little tap. A little tap honk. Like a...
Allie, how about you?
It depends on how long I was waiting there.
Mm-hmm. So,
I'd probably let it go for a bit, thinking he'll look up.
At some point.
At some point.
Right.
So you give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe a few more seconds than you would an average pedestrian if it was
yes.
a police officer.
Okay.
I mean, I would probably give him a little more time as well than right. just a random person.
All right, so that's question one.
Okay.
Question two is... If you do honk your horn, what would you think about the police officer then getting out of his car, coming over, and giving you a ticket?
For honking your horn?
Yes.
I would be angry.
Cool or not cool?
Not cool.
Not? Well, let me tell you that it is. I have seen this twice. Well, once in the news and once on Curb Your Enthusiasm in the last 2 weeks. Now, maybe Larry David is – maybe what happened to Larry is not real life. But it was pretty funny. Damon Wayans is the police officer, and Larry David does exactly as I've described. He honks at an intersection at the cop, and here's what happens.
Sir, I don't appreciate the aggressiveness of the beep.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? This is my friend's car, and I'm not really attuned to the subtleties of the horn yet. It was merely just a reminder beep, a subtle way of telling you, time to go. Let's get moving on.
License and registration, please. I'm going to write you a ticket.
A ticket?
It was a bad decision on your part to honk at a police officer.
Oh, what? Why? Are you above the beep?
Absolutely. I'm a police officer. I protect your rights.
My rights to beep. That's one of my rights.
Yeah, but you don't...
Beeping. That's a right. That's America. We're allowed to beep.
Yeah, well, I'm allowed to write this ticket.
So he gets a ticket. And then... So that's two Sundays ago. All right. So this past Friday in St. Louis, Scott Smith is the man's name. He and two coworkers are returning to work downtown from having lunch, and they are stopped at a red light at an intersection in St. Louis. The light turns green. The vehicle in front of them, which turns out to be an unmarked police car, by the way, fails to move. Mr. Smith said the light turned green. The car in front of me just sat there. So I honked once. He started to scoot forward, and then he just kind of hit the brakes real hard. So I honked again. He started to go forward. Then he kind of threw his arms up, but he still wasn't moving. He was still blocking the way. So then I laid on the horn as he slowly crept forward. And then right as he got through the intersection, he pulled to the far left lane. So this guy doesn't know it's a police officer in front of him.
Right.
But so the police officer pulls over to the side of the road, and as soon as Scott Smith drives by, the police officer flips on his lights and pulls him over and gives him a ticket. We don't know for what, by the way. Police officer did not tell him what the ticket was for. Mr. Smith has to wait until it arrives in the mail to find out what it was. But what's interesting about this story is, as the police officer came up to the car, he started recording on his cell phone. And I think you guys are going to be surprised by this tape because, A, most of us are on our best behavior when somebody's getting ready to write us a ticket.
Yeah, true.
Or when we're trying to get out of a ticket being written. If a police officer is there, we are yes sir, no sir, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Most of us? Not Scott Smith, man. He is going for it. And the officer is giving it right back. This is a very contentious conversation. More so than I've heard in most police encounters.
Seriously?
Is your horn stuck?
Is your brake...
Is your f***ing horn stuck, smartass?
What the f*** is this?
What the f*** is this? Let me see your driver's license.
By the way, aren't you stunned by hearing this?
Oh, my God.
This is like the opposite. Most cops are so nice and so respectful and keep things so cool because it's in their best interest to not escalate a situation on the side
of the
road.
Although
the
driver
either.
Sounded like he said something first.
Yeah.
No, the cop was the first one to drop the F-bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it's getting worse.
This is f***ed up.
Good. Let me see your driver's license.
I will. For what?
Let me see your driver's license.
For what?
By the way, let me just butt in here and say, I think it's completely legitimate to ask what kinds of tickets are being considered at this point.
Not without giving him your license.
You have to give your license.
Okay.
And then you can ask whatever questions you want, but he doesn't have to tell you. It sounds very fightable, though, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to be curious to see how this one plays out, too. All right, there's more.
For what?
Tell you what, you're going to either show me your driver's license or you're going to wind up getting a ticket. I'll tow your car and lock it.
For what?
Let me see your driver's license.
For what?
You're being stopped for a traffic violation. Let me
for honking at someone who's sitting at a green light? F***ing ridiculous.
Sorry, what you just said?
I said this is f***ing ridiculous.
Well, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't be a f***ing asshole.
You're sitting at a green light. I have to go back to work.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I hope you're not in a hurry because you're going to be delayed for a little while.
So...
Cool.
He calls him an effing jack-off as he walks off, by the way. The cop does. The cop says that about the driver. So the cop then calls for backup, by the way, and the driver sits on the side of the road with his two coworkers trying to come back from lunch and go to work for 45 minutes.
Wow.
And Mr. Smith says, I was already late. I had coworkers with me. I think he just was just wasting my time just trying to get back at me, you know, for honking at him. He said, like I said, he still doesn't know what the ticket is for. He didn't give him a copy of the ticket. The police officer said that the device that prints out the tickets in his car was broken so that he couldn't hand it to
this
him.
This is but
that
all it would shaky.
It would be arriving in the mail.
Can I take a stab here and say
yes.
Scott Smith is a white man?
I think so, yeah.
He's real lucky. Because that's some BS. He was combative from the first freaking second that the cop came up. F that guy.
He was combative, but you understand why he was combative. Because he honked at a guy who wouldn't go through an intersection, and that guy then turned out to be a cop and came up and tried to give him a ticket.
But he also said, was your horn stuck? Like, he wasn't just like, boop, boop.
Oh, he laid on it. He laid on it the third time. Yes, exactly.
I give a tap and then a little more firm, and then you do lay on it the third
That's
time.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
Third time.
Is that illegal?
I don't know.
See, I don't know, but the
it
code is...
It might be like a noise thing.
Yeah, that may end up being what
You're
it is.
You're not allowed to honk your horn?
You are, but just not in excess, maybe?
And I have heard in the past that your horn is to be used in an emergency situation to try to avoid injury or accident or to alert somebody to something dangerous or something like that. I don't know. And the rules may vary from state to state as well. But I am going to keep an eye on this story and see what the, see more out of St. Louis, see what happens. But a fascinating story.
Scott Smith sounds like a dick.
Let's squeeze in Rick in Pasadena. Hi, Rick.
Oh, does he have info?
Yeah.
What's going on, guys? You know what? That actually just happened to me a couple weeks ago. I live right here in Pasadena. And you know when the police officers come up to the intersection, they kind of back off from the cars in front of them. Well, we had a green light. And, of course, I'm a little arrogant. I have my insurance, my license, and everything. So I'm like, he was sitting there, and there's all these cars behind us. So I actually tapped my horn, and I'm like, okay. And he still wouldn't move forward. So he finally moved forward, and I went around, and he pulled me over. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding. So once we got to the side of the road, I had my, you know what, I'm already smart enough. I had my insurance and my license right there. And he grabbed it, and I go, seriously, did you pull me over? And he goes, well, you were honking your horn. I said, yeah, but you were blocking the intersection. And he's like, well, you're not supposed to be. I'm like, are you going to give me a ticket or what? Because I'm in a hurry. I was in a hurry as well. So
Rick is also a dick. I love it.
Everybody's mouthing off at the cops anymore.
All right, go ahead.
So he ended up he ended up giving me the I could give you a ticket, this or this kind of attitude.
And I'm just, you know what, do what you need to do. And I don't know if he could, if it was legal or illegal that I honked my horn, but I get it. I mean, literally, he was blocking the intersection for everybody else to turn. So like you said, it was an emergency, and it could have been a hazard, too. So that's my story. He did get me, but he let me go. But he did pull me over and give me a hassle.
Wow. This is bizarre.
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky it wasn't a sheriff's department, because they're kind of, I can't say them, you know. But
all right. Thank you for the call, Rick. Appreciate it.
Rick's making friends everywhere.
Right.
By the way, that's what Rick sounds like at 6:30 in the morning. I wonder what he sounds like he got pulled over, right? All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story and keep you posted. Let's clear the lines right now and give away some Morrissey tickets. As you know, he is coming to town this weekend. We are very excited. He's playing the Hollywood Bowl. Both shows are sold out Friday night and Saturday night. We are looking for Morrissey fans right now. If you want to play a game to win these tickets, 1-800-520-1067. That's the number. We'll do it next on... Allie, you were doing some research there during Green Day. What did we find out? Is it illegal to honk your horn at somebody at an intersection?
It's all so vague. The wording is so vague, and I can't figure it out. We need to talk to a police officer.
It's illegal unnecessarily.
Like unnecessary.
So who's deciding that?
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. All right, cool stuff. First, though, this is the story of the weekend as far as I'm concerned, right? Arian Foster is a name you may know. He just retired, I want to say, a couple months ago.
Yeah, the end of the season.
Did he retire as a Dolphin chip?
He did.
Oh, that makes his story even more fun. He, I think, is probably best known as a Houston, Texas, an NFL running back. And he, for some reason, spent about 3 hours on Twitter yesterday debating with his followers as to whether or not he could take a wolf or not.
Yeah, one-on-one.
In a one-on-one fight, could Arian Foster beat up a wolf? Now, is there any deep background on this that I am unaware of, Allie? How did this get started? Like, why? Where did this even begin?
The man just has thoughts.
All right. And, he has wolf thoughts.
He has wolf thoughts. And when you have those thoughts and you're kind of working through them, why not take a little debate stance with other people that might have, you know, anti-wolf thoughts? And then it just becomes a debate.
All right. Well, as I mentioned, it went on for about 3 hours, so we'll try to hit some of the highlights in the back and forth in the Twitterverse that was yesterday. So would you like to play the part of Arian Foster, Allie?
Would I?
And then I will play the detractors?
Absolutely.
All right. It starts yesterday afternoon, and he begins it with what?
Want to go camping? But wildlife scares the S out of me. I honestly think I can get a wolf one-on-one, though. What?
So at that point... 2,000-something people liked the tweet that he thinks he can go one-on-one with a wolf.
Right.
And the first to respond is user Electric One, who writes back.
But what does he go by?
He's a Beaver Sutherland.
Thank you.
He's Beaver Sutherland. And here's what he types to Arian Foster. You could take down a wolf? Wow. You'd be dead within 10 minutes. Arian's not having any of that, though.
I'm 230. Wolves are what, 180, 200 tops? He has no thumbs. If I control his neck, he's donezo.
All right, so it sounds like Mr. Foster has given this a great deal of thought.
Then he goes on. Wolves don't scare me like that, because in my neighborhood was a bunch of loose and rage pits. If he alone, I think I could get him.
So did Arian Foster have experience growing up with having to, like, be always on alert for
a pit
bull in the neighborhood?
He had to protect himself from a loose and raged pit.
Okay, so that's about the same as a wolf, right? Because dogs equal wolves.
Yeah, he's good.
All right, so Beaver writes back, wolves bite so hard that all they have to do is get a hold of one part of you, would tear you apart. So Beaver is not at all assuaged by what Arian Foster is saying. He's still putting his money down on the wolf.
But then Arian comes back with this. How are we going to bite with half a jaw? Right?
And that's because Arian Foster would have done what?
He would have handled it. He would have punched him, and then that jaw just snaps right in half.
Wow.
How are we going to bite with half a jaw?
All right. Senior Eric now weighs in. But wolves hunt in packs, he tells Arian.
This is where it gets real good. Arian comes back with probably the most genius thing I've ever heard. None of them have thumbs.
All right, so none of them have thumbs. That's where Arian's at.
Yeah.
Joby One Kenobi weighs in. Arian, I feel like you were giving opposable thumbs too much credit. Didn't you see The Gray? Wolves are nature's Wu-Tang Clan.
Although, good point. Arian comes back with this. Thumbs means I can grab him. He can't grab me. All he has is a mouth. Grab his neck, he can't bite. Plus, I have the advantage of honking about the wolf, like I'm prepared. If we run into each other in my head, oh yeah, it's on, wolf. He's just like, what's this aggressive species threatening me? And then this. I've studied the wolf. He can't read. I know his weaknesses. Plus the thumb thing.
So Arian feels like he would be better prepared in a one-on-one battle because he has done the research.
He's done the research, and that wolf isn't reading his timeline. He doesn't know he's coming for him.
Wolf has no idea what's about to go down.
None.
All right. Not Terry Collins writes in. His Twitter handle is Mets Fake Skipper. Arian Foster, again, he will claw an artery open or claw your face off. Then you go to grab your arm, and he chews your face off. It's a lose-lose. So Arian Foster is not convincing the Twitterverse that he's still the man in this fight.
I think he won over a lot of people with this one. Bro, you think a wolf knows where my artery is? All of a sudden I'm fighting a wolf that knows biology?
Don't animals have pretty good internal radar on how to fight?
I think
if you're a wolf, I think you've got some... You may not be able to read it or write it, but I think you kind of know what part of another animal to attack. Yeah. I don't think a human is much different than anything else. A wolf is fighting to you.
I mean, you're reading too much into this.
Beefer weighs back in. This has been debated before, and those who know say a man has no chance versus a wild wolf. 90% of Twitter would die.
I'm in the 10%. What about his teeth and claws? This ain't a video game. One hit and I'm done. It's a fight. So he's basically saying this isn't a back and forth. He's just going to get him one time and he's done.
Just then take him down.
Yeah, he continues on with, if he bites me, his main weapon is immobilized. Then he becomes vulnerable. This is why thumbs are so important.
Ah, back to the thumbs. Now, look, I get that Arian Foster is a tremendous physical specimen. You're not a running back in the NFL unless you've got a lot going for you.
Sure.
He's going to win in most fights in most situations against people. But he's still just a human, right?
I believe he is.
And a wolf is just a wolf.
I believe that to be true.
Dwayne Brown writes in, who is an NFL player himself, right?
Yeah, I believe.
Dwayne Brown, 76?
Mm-hmm.
He weighs in to the controversy now. Was scared to pet my silver lab.
Not scared he'd bite me, scared he'd try me, and I'd have to kill your dog.
Whoa. All right. Now here's where it starts to get ugly. This is where the Twitter sphere is getting annoyed at Arian.
They are fed up with Arian.
They're fed up with all of his confidence. Frijole Forever writes in to Arian Foster. A wolf also hasn't had a groin, hamstring, and knee injuries in the last 6 years. Advantage, wolf. So he's basically bringing Arian Foster down as damaged goods, as not the peak physical specimen that he claims to be.
Mm-hmm. Here's what he says about that wolf. Also hasn't been to 4 Pro Bowls, overcome those injuries, and doesn't have thumbs. Advantage me, effer.
Yay!
Arian.
Ladies and gentlemen. There it is, Arian Foster versus the Wolf. And I'm telling you, and you said it earlier today, Ali, if somebody doesn't immediately put a pay-per-view together, then we are just leaving money on the table.
I'm going to say it is weird, and I don't like it.
Agree.
I'm not down with this.
Yeah, this is not okay.
It's too far. You guys are both too far.
You're both no's on this?
I'm a no.
So they take something out of your body and it's just trash as far as you're concerned. It should just be burned. You should just pretend it never happened.
Yes, because what am I going to do with it?
Well, here's the story that we started yesterday's show with, and it bears repeating because Ali missed it, and I really want to see her enjoy this. Blogger turns skin removed in designer vagina surgery into necklace. So the topic is going to be, you had a medical procedure and something was taken either off or out of your body. And rather than just put it in the medical waste can, you talked the personnel at the hospital into giving it to you. So now you have a piece of you somewhere in a jar. That's what we're looking for right now.
Why do you want a piece of you in a jar?
Or around your neck.
520-1067. Kevin, if you had, and I will tell the story about the designer vagina surgery here in a second.
Okay.
But if you had a, here's just an example. I don't know if anyone's ever done this. Maybe we'll find out on the phones. But let's say you went in for a brain tumor operation.
Right.
They took out a brain tumor.
Right.
Wouldn't there be some strength in having that tumor in a jar, put it on your mantle at home, and going, I beat that mother effer.
No.
That tumor right there, that tumor came from me, and I won.
Here's the thing. I don't have to question, hey, should I keep that and look at it on the mantle, like Bean says, and say, hey, effer, I won, or should I not keep it? Because that thought never enters my mind. They take it out, they dispose of it, and then I'm healthier, and I move on with my life.
Right, but they're taking out something that was significant. It potentially could have killed you,
right,
but it didn't.
Right.
I can see wanting to have that victory reminder around in my house.
You could see that. I couldn't.
But I'm telling you, I believe in our listeners, and I believe they're going to come through at 1-800-520-1067 with body parts that have been saved. Here's the story for Tracy Kiss is her name. She went to the gym within the last few months, Allie, and she realized that there was a lot of pain happening. And she had felt it before. It was a burning sensation after exercise. And she went to the doctor, and it turned out that she had a cyst. And a cyst had developed in her lady parts because of friction of the excess skin on her labia.
Oh.
We heard from a lot of people in yesterday's show who begged me to never say the word labia again on the
show. Right.
Yeah, that would be great.
Good work.
She was advised to have it removed after the operation. She asked the surgeon if she could keep the skin, and she proudly displayed it at home in a jar full of surgical fluid. So she kept her labia in a jar, and then at some point, and maybe this is too much information, but at some point...
We're way past too much information.
At some point, it started to turn gray not be attractive. It didn't have...
Oh, was attractive as opposed for to a when while? It was that hot-looking labia
right?
in a jar.
Checked out that jar.
At some point, at the beginning, it was like a kind of an attractive pink, and now it's turned all gray. Oh. So she decided, hey, I still want to keep this, but I need some more attractive way to keep it. So what she did is she went through the steps and turned it into jewelry, and now she wears her labia in a necklace around her neck.
I sort of have a boner.
See, I told you.
No, it's good.
So she is proudly displaying it, and not everybody is on board, but a lot of people understand totally where she's coming from. She says it's a good reminder that people should speak out about female genital surgery, and she hopes that it will be a talking point. She hopes that people will ask her about it, and she can have a discussion.
Who's going to say, hey, those earrings look like your labia? Let's talk about it. Honestly, that's going to happen anywhere, anytime.
What kind of happy hour is she going to?
She's not looking for conversation about it.
Well, let's see.
She's wearing earrings.
Let's see what's going on with Erica in Redlands on line two at 1-800-520-1067. Erica knows what's up, and we welcome you to the Kevin Bean Show. What's going on?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, crazy person.
Well, this happened when I was a kid. I was kind of a weird kid. And I had to have my tonsils removed, and I talked the doctor into letting me take them home in a jar.
Mm-hmm. And do you still have them today?
No, I think my mom flushed them down the toilet.
Yeah, because your mom is a right-thinking American. And then you got put right into therapy, didn't you, Erica?
I support you, Erica. I think you did the right thing, and your mom's a bad lady. Thank you for the call.
By the way, Bean, just for the record, kept his donkey's balls.
Oh, is that code?
No.
Okay.
He owned a donkey, and he helped cut off the balls.
Well, I was involved in neutering my pet, yes.
Put them in a jar and brought them to K-Rock at work, where he kept that jar of donkey balls for, I want to say, 5-6 years.
Yeah, and then it started leaking, which was unfortunate.
Oh, my God.
So that's who I work with.
That's why we don't share a locker. That's why we don't share a locker anymore. Hey, let's go back to Redlands and talk to Hector, line 5. I don't know what's going on out at Redlands, but he's got a hell of a story. Welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, what's up, Kevin Bean?
909 coming through, Hector.
Hey, you there?
Yeah, we're here. What happened?
Okay, my son was born with an extra finger on his left hand, so he had a little finger coming off his pinky. Doctor told us to tie it with the fishing string, and it eventually fell off in a couple days. So now we have it in the closet like a little black raisin.
Why do you have it in the closet?
I don't know. My wife just felt weird throwing it away, so we just kept it.
Doesn't she feel weirder about it now?
Sorry?
Doesn't she feel weird about it now?
No, it's actually still pretty cool. We still have it.
All right.
Okay. See, when the party gets slow, he can go to his closet and pull something out to get it going again.
Yeah, that's what he wants for a party.
Let's take George in Torrance, line 6, up next on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, crazy George.
Hey, guys. When I was about 8 years old, I was taken down to TJ
got my appendix removed, was kept above the refrigerator afterwards.
First of all,
let's start at the beginning.
A lot to unpack here, George.
So you said TJ.
Who made the decision? Hey, you know what? We need surgery. Let's leave America.
Basically, the doctors couldn't find what was wrong with me. So as soon as we went down to TJ, within 2 minutes of being examined by the doctor, he said, I want to put you in the emergency room right away.
Yeah, but they take everybody's appendix out right when you go to the doctor. I mean, it's TJ.
It's very possible there was nothing wrong with you, George.
And how's it look all these years later in a jar above your fridge?
I have no idea. It was probably flushed down the toilet years and years ago.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, so you don't have it anymore. All right, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Here's a text from the 951. I'm a nurse practitioner, and people always want to keep their bits and pieces. One lady wanted to keep the staples I took out of her scalp. One patient I met keeps his dismembered finger in a jar and takes it with him when he goes out.
No!
Keep that in mind when you're on Tinder this weekend. It could be that dude. All right, let's try.
Let's go to Al. I'd like to talk to him in Duarte because he sort of did the same thing as the girl in the story. Hey, Al.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We are good. How are you?
Good. When I was in high school, I had my wisdom teeth removed, and I hung on to them for a few years until I was in my mid-20s or so. I always had a plan to turn them into cufflinks, so I found a jeweler who was willing to do that, so I took them my teeth and... You know, a few hundred dollars later, I had a nice pair of white cufflinks that I used to
wear. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner.
I don't know if it's true that.
The kids love that.
Cufflinks, so that's a conversation starter, right, Al?
Yeah, it is. I mean, most people don't realize what it is. Some people actually think it's kind of gross, but, you know, it's one of a kind, and you won't find it anywhere else.
I mean, for a good reason.
That keep doing what you're doing. Hey, let's do one more.
The kids are really excited about this topic.
Let's do one more. Let's make it Jason in Simi Valley. It's a weird thing to keep here.
Hey, Jason.
What'd it do?
Oh, Jason.
You kept what?
You kept what?
Jason.
So I had kids at a very early age. 20 was my first. Second one 18 months later.
Okay.
I had a third one after I went to a urologist to get a vasectomy.
He said,
I'm too young. So 6 years later, I have a third kid. At this time, my wife is in nursing school, and she asked the practitioner if she can come in the room with and assist. And sure enough, doctor lets my wife come in and
what?
Assist. Somehow she convinces him and wants to make sure that my one-inch portion of my vas deferens was kept and very secured in a jar.
She took your penis home, didn't she? Be honest.
So you have the piece that they pulled out when they did the vasectomy. You still have it in a jar.
You know what? I don't have it to this day. We kept it for 5 years as a novelty thing. This was 20 years ago.
Did you, as Bean says, bring it out when the party got slow? Get it going again?
Exactly. Exactly.
Your fourth kid was just a little thing in a jar then.
Exactly.
All right. Oh, thank you for the call, Jason. Appreciate that.
Hey, great talking to everybody.
See, I told you our listeners would come through.
Yeah.
That was fun, right?
Yeah, that was great.
All right. Here's the deal, you guys. We're clearing those lines so that we can invite you to call right now if you want a double dose of Foo Fighters. Cal Jam 17 this weekend at Glen Helen.
Which, by the way, is Foo Fighters and Queens of the Stone Age and Cage the Elephant and Liam Gallagher and Royal Blood. It's going to be awesome.
Ridiculous.
Amazing show. Plus, you also get access to Kevin Amin's exclusive breakfast with Foo Fighters at the HD Radio Sound Space at K-Rock on Tuesday morning. You win both. We're looking for you to sing right now. We're looking for Foo Fighters fan songs, originals, parodies, raps, or slam poetry. It's up to you. 1-800-520-1067. We'll give away some tickets next on K-Rock.
Allie, how was your weekend?
It was lovely. How was yours?
I had a great weekend.
Saw a tweet that was concerning.
Yeah. I went to Luke Robitaille's charity poker tournament. He does this every year.
Right.
He and his wife, Stacia, run a charity for kids who age out of the foster care community. Like at 18, they kick them out.
Right.
And so then they find kids that want to go to college and they sponsor them. And it's an amazing charity.
Wonderful.
And every year they do a poker tournament. So this was Saturday and it was at Santa Monica Museum of Flying. Have you ever been there?
Is it in the hangar?
No, yeah, I think it's just a big building right there near the actual airport, Santa Monica Airport.
All right.
So this is the first year they had it there. So I drove in and said event parking, and I went and I parked and I walked and I went into the event.
Easy, yeah.
Easy peasy. Played poker. Sure. I don't know, there was like 300 people.
And at one point, I should have been beat. About halfway through, I had a pair of tens, and a guy had a pair of sevens, and then the board turned over, and there was another seven, so he had three sevens. So I was like, I reached over and shook his hand. I was, congratulations, man, good job. And I stood up to walk away. And then the last card came in. It was the only card that I could have won on, and I won.
So, did she then say, psych, and no, take your hand back?
I didn't say psych. No, I had already I had already finished shaking his hand, congratulating him.
You didn't wait for that last card?
Well, what are the chances?
Still. Though, there is a chance, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so what are the chances?
I'm not positive what the chances are, but I have two of the four.
Right.
Tens. So there's only two left. So what are the chances that they're actually going to, that card's going to come at that moment? It's the only card I could win on.
Yeah.
It did.
Okay.
So I was lucky, lucky AF. So then I make it all the way to eighth place. Very happy. Get to the final table. Everybody's having fun. Everybody's watching. Party. Sure. Hey, I'm doing well. Everybody else is doing well. We're having a good time. Perhaps a beverage or two. And then they give out prizes for the top 10 places. Then I pick my prize, and it's fantastic. And then I walk outside. And I look across the street.
Yeah.
At the parking lot that I'm parked in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's black. It's dark.
It's very much closed.
It's not just closed. You can't see it. I don't know. Somehow it's a black hole. You look
it's
in there
invisible.
And there's...
It's invisible. Oh, no.
There are no cars in there. And I thought, well, maybe that's not the lot I parked in.
Right.
Maybe it's next to it one way or the other. Because I haven't gone to Santa Monica Airport very often. So I walk all the way around holding my little bag of goodies. I have like a little bag of stuff that I had won. And I walk all the way around the left side. No, it's locked. This is crazy. Walk all the way around to the right side.
Oh, no.
I completely walked around the entire parking lot. And it was locked.
Sure was.
And there were no lights. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes most places have some lighting.
Sure.
Nothing. I thought I could see my car. And I'm pretty sure it was the only one there.
Oh, man.
But I wasn't positive. I couldn't make it out. I was just looking. And then I thought, well, this fence doesn't look that high. This is where I go into Kevin thinking.
Sure.
I'm 6'2". It's about 2 feet up. So I'm thinking, 8 foot fence. Not bad.
Sure.
Chain link. No, okay. There's no like wire at the top or anything to keep. So I climbed the fence.
Okay.
Holding my little bag of goodies. And then I drop the bag of goodies, and I get down on the other side, and I go, and I find my car. It's there.
Okay, excellent.
It is indeed the only car there.
Oh, right.
Just me. And I get in the car, and I turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
And only then do I think, there's no gates open.
Right. How are you getting out?
Right.
Uh-huh. Only
but
then.
I didn't have that thought until I had started the car.
So not before you went over the fence.
Correct.
Not as you walked to your car.
Very excited to see my car.
Sure. You were thrilled.
I found it.
Right.
I solved this.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking.
You sure are.
That's what I thought. So I turned it back off, and I walked back to where I jumped the fence.
Uh-huh. Please tell me you at least left the bag of goodies in the car.
I didn't. That's funny.
You brought it with you.
I didn't even think of that for one second. Kev Dog, eat
dog. Kev Dog. Better take my goodies with me and get back over this fence.
And I did the tweet, and I got a bunch of responses from people. And right this second when you said it, it's the first time I thought I could have left a little bag of goodies in the car. So I take my bag of goodies, and I re-jump the fence.
Sure.
And I call an Uber, and then the Uber comes about 15 minutes later.
Oh, good.
And I take the Uber, and I go home and go to bed.
Oh,
so
heaven.
It's a pretty triumphant beginning of the night.
Right.
With some luck, and then not so much of an ending.
Well, then it dipped down, but then again triumphant because you got to your car.
Right.
It's like a roller coaster of emotions.
Exactly. I'm thinking to myself, I'm the smartest. Oh, you know what? No.
Oh.
No, I'm not.
Oh, man.
So that was my Saturday night. So then I had the Uber to get my car on Sunday. Get
of course.
It out of the lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So no signage, though, when you went in saying this lot closes at 11, midnight, that
all right.
type of thing?
If I'm going to be honest, there was a sign that said the lot closed at 6:30. But
P.M.?
Yes, but... And the poker tournament started at like 4. But it said event parking. So I thought, oh, well, this is
an event.
Clearly an event. And I thought it was the only event there.
Oh.
So that.
Oh, man.
So then when I got to my car yesterday,
man.
It had a little note on it that said, we're going to tow your car in 12 hours if you don't get it.
I had gotten it 12 hours just before they towed it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I'm a genius.
Is that what we're saying?
That's the takeaway.
Okay. Yeah.
This hour, by the way, we're going to hook you up with tickets on board the party bus for KROQ Ditch Day at Mountain High. The numbers of feet of snow that are predicted for the next couple of weeks in Southern California mountains are insane, right?
Yep.
You can ride up to KROQ up the mountain and get lift tickets for the day coming up on Friday, January 20th. Your chance to win this hour. Go to KROQ.com for more information and another chance to win as well.
Mead, what's your beef with the leaf blowers?
Well, first of all, they should be illegal. They're awful and pointless. And
they're not pointless.
They're pointless.
No, they take the dirt and the leaves that are on your property, mm-hmm. and they spray them onto somebody else's property.
Right.
That's a purpose.
It is.
Now the dirt and the leaves are not on your property.
And I don't understand. Look, I understand. I know that a lot of communities in Southern California have already banned at least gas-powered leaf blowers. There are two kinds, right? There's gas-powered one, there's the electric ones. And lots of, including the city of Los Angeles, by the way, has banned gasoline-powered leaf blowers. They just are, they're the noisiest thing that will ever happen in your neighborhood, too, by the way.
They're noisy and they smell.
Yeah, and they
smell. So you got that going for you.
And they pollute like crazy. There's no reason. It's the laziest, most worthless device of all time. And I'm telling you, when I'm running,
it's not worthless, Bean.
It's worthless.
Because you're accomplishing something that you need accomplished.
Blowing leaves from my yard into your yard.
Yes.
Basically.
Your yard is clean now. Congratulations.
I live in a neighborhood where there are multiple people doing multiple leaf blowing things on multiple days of the week. And
how many leaf blowing things are there?
Well, I mean,
don't you just blow stuff?
Yeah, but okay. I'm just saying, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it happening, and I'm going to crack up, you guys. I'm getting to the breaking point every time one of those things fires up because for whatever reason, it seems like it takes an hour and it's 100 decibels. And they shouldn't be allowed. There's nothing else that I could do in this neighborhood that would be accepted or acceptable at that volume.
How many leaves are in your neighborhood?
Yeah.
Like the all the time. What's going on, dude?
I live in a very high Omar. I live in a very wooded neighborhood.
So weird.
Right? The forest in the middle of New Orleans. Right.
No, but there are multiple houses that all have their own yards and their own trees and their own leaf blowers. But, I mean, think about it.
I feel like he's exaggerating.
I'm not exaggerating.
Do you have neighbors who use leaf blowers to blow their crap into your yard?
Into the sidewalk in front of my house? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So but you need to get one yourself so that you can keep it going.
I don't even let...
Have you ever heard the phrase pay it forward?
Uh-huh. I have.
That's
heard
what
that,
you
yes.
do. Is you get something and then you go, oh, this is a gift, and then you re-gift it to someone else. Yep.
I don't allow my land, and I have a very small yard, but I do have a team that comes out every couple of weeks to fix it up and mow it and rake and all that. And I don't allow them to use a leaf blower. I told them it's a no leaf blower house, and I'm serious about that. Don't use it. Don't want it. Don't want to hear it.
Did they even believe you at first?
No, they did. They did. But could I go out onto the street with a boombox and play music for 30 minutes as loud as a leaf blower and get away with it? Or would I be ridden out of town?
Are you in Compton? Hells yeah, you can.
They never would allow it. I'm saying
would it
there's
be in your eyes? Because, yes, all day.
There's no. There's
would
no,
it be in the 1940s? Because they're not going to run you out of town.
There's no other thing that you can do as a neighbor that is as loud and as obnoxious as a leaf blower and get away with it.
I think that's why I like it, is because it's the 1-2 punch of obnoxious and loud and smell.
I mean, it really is
a
giant middle finger to anyone who lives in your neighborhood.
Yes.
And tell me how it's allowed. Tell me how it's acceptable.
It makes me laugh.
But seriously.
Omar, how do you do it? Omar has a leaf blower himself.
I have a pretty good one. And
you're a guy with a leaf blower.
Oh,
God
totally.
Damn you to hell.
Totally. Yeah, for sure.
And you don't feel the least bit bad about it when you fire that thing up?
Hell no. Why? I mean, I'm only running it for maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes at a time. Not even 10 minutes, 5 minutes, because it gets the work done so quickly. And that's one of the reasons I bought it. I bought it because, first of all, during the summer, I have a lot of people over, and I would have to hose down my deck.
Right.
This way, I just blow it out. I conserve water. I get all the dust out of, off of my deck, all the leaves.
Ooh, see how he said conserve water in there?
Yeah, that was nice.
And during the fall, I have I have a couple of trees, and I blow all the leaves into this corner of my yard, and it's easier to pick up. And the best thing,
but you pick it up.
But I pick it up, okay. Right? And the, but the
and
best
you
thing,
couldn't use a rake for any of that.
But it saves me a lot of time.
Uh-huh.
I'm not rich like you. I don't have gardeners doing all my stuff.
Why does it make you so bad? Is it the noise and the time of day being?
Yes.
Why does it make you so angry?
Yes, it's the noise and the time of day. Oh. Yes.
I feel like Omar's leaving something out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do. It's not about easiness and getting it to a corner.
So
I have
a neighbor that I hate.
Okay, here we go.
And
he has a
tree on his property.
Okay.
But the leaves hang over to my yard.
Sure.
And, man, this thing just drops so many leaves.
Uh-huh.
So during the day when, you know, nobody's around, I'll get the leaf blower out. And within, like, a minute, I'll blow all the leaves that are in my yard onto his driveway and yard.
You're the worst.
There you go.
You are the worst.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There you go. Because he sucks. Now,
the guy blows.
Do you do that to your other neighbor?
No way. I love my other neighbor. I pick it up. Yeah, yeah. I love my other neighbor. My other neighbor's awesome. Yeah, he's the best.
So don't get on the wrong side of DJ.
Right. That's what we've learned.
All right. So what's the neighbor say, by the way? The neighbor is aware that you're doing this, I assume, right?
Hasn't said anything yet. I'll kick his ass.
Wow, he's looking for a fight.
Very concerning.
Is Omar the only one who has a war going on over a leaf blower? I am curious. I can't be the only person who is so upset by these infernal machines, can I?
I mean, you're
infernal.
The level of anger that you have does not make any sense to me.
Because they should be outlawed. That's why.
I hear you saying that.
I mean, I've said, like, on a Saturday, oh, that's loud. And then I go about my day.
But also, it's around for maybe 20 minutes and then done, right?
Yeah.
It's not like all day, every day. I need to visit Bean's neighborhood.
It's right. Forest. Bean? It is a straight up
right?
forest.
I don't know what's going on up there, Bean.
24/7. There's a lot of small houses on the street, each of whom has their own.
There it is now.
Oh, no. There it is now. Each of whom apparently has their own time of day that they want to leaf blow. But Omar can't. Okay. All right. Stop it. Oh.
We're taking care of you, Bean.
Oh, Kevin.
Oh. There must be somebody besides Omar who's involved in a leaf blower fight, and that's the first thing we want to hear from. If you've got a dispute going on with the neighbors, if you've ever gone out there,
hang on, I'm using the leaf blower.
I know that. Back away, please. Is that possible? If you've ever had a conversation with the neighbor where you
asked
him,
I can't hear you.
We're looking for callers right now at 1-800-520-1067. Your leaf blower fight is what we want to hear about.
What?
If it's happened to you like it's happened to Omar's neighbor, give us a call. We'll talk to you next on K-Rock.
What?
Leaf blowers are the worst is the theme of today's program. We're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. If you have been involved with disputes with your neighbors over leaf blowers.
Which are great.
Also known as Satan's hair dryers. Listen to this email, by the way. This is from Earl, who writes in. My family company manufactures and distributes gas-powered lawn equipment, including leaf blowers. My father introduced the concept of the gas-powered backpack blower to the U.S. market in the 1970s.
How about
that? Loaded.
Death penalty. Death penalty.
What's up, Earl?
Sorry, Earl.
Call me.
Its use and popularity exploded in the drought years of the mid-1970s. So there now at least we have a name. Now we at least have a face to put on this tragedy that is the leaf blower. All right, we're
easy.
Taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Let's talk to Art. He's in Montclair. Let's find out what's going on with him and his neighborhood.
All right. Hold on. Went to the wrong line. Let's go to Art. Hi.
Hey, good morning, guys. How
good
you
morning.
Guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Hey, so I got a neighbor in the back who just happens to hate us with a passion. It must be because we're always a typical Mexican family, very loud.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to buy a leaf blower and blow all our dirt over to his house. We make sure that bright and early on Saturday morning, we're out there clean the patio, even if we're not having a party or a gathering. We're still out there just blowing.
So you got the leaf blower exclusively for revenge.
Exactly. That's
wow.
Why we did it.
Art.
It's really more of a weapon than it is a tool for you.
For us, yes, it is. The wife even gets into it and goes out there and makes sure she's blowing the dirt and the leaves off of our yard.
All right, Art. Keep doing what you're doing, I guess. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Chris. He's in Sherman Oaks. He's up next on line two on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. I'm with Bean here. Leaf blowers are the absolute worst.
Because?
I live in an apartment building, and we have a two-year-old son, and it pretty much goes without saying that every time it's nap time, it's also leaf blowing time.
Ah, mm-hmm. Yeah, look, there's no convenient or right time to leaf blow in a neighborhood. You're always going to be disturbing somebody, even if they're just trying to sit on a couch and read a book or watch TV or, you know, play with their kids or be on a computer, whatever they want to do. It's always going to be annoying, day or night, no matter what time you're doing it.
Day or night. And then it's not just leaf blowing in the hallways. They, let's go down to the garage. Let's leaf blow all the cars. Anyone that has a clean car.
Yeah.
Covered in dirt.
What the hell's going on with
your kids? What's happening?
The hell's
there?
Going on with your guy?
All right.
Maybe he lives up there with Bean.
I'm going in the house now. Let's leaf blow the house.
Yeah, gotta leaf blow the toilet.
What do you got upstairs?
I'm going to need you to get out of this hallway. We're coming through the leaf blower. All right. Dare we go to Nick, South Pasadena, line one, see what he's got to offer here?
I mean, we could try it. Yeah. Hey, Nick.
Yeah. So. Got this common fence with a neighbor, and they're like being they got a crew, or you know, and they come out, and you know, his yard is immaculate and perfect, but under the fence on my side, they'll like have their detritus and their crap, and they don't care. They blow it. I don't think it's intentional. It's just kind of like, you know, like they have a line and it goes over to my side. So, you know, I'm totally against leaf blowers and stuff too. So I don't have one. So I rented one. And I have a big 19-foot ladder, and you think about it, they're not called fallen leaf blowers, they're called leaf blowers. Leaves are on trees. So I took my 19-foot ladder, I went up to his tree that was about, you know, half the leaves were still on there, and I blew every mother effing leaf off that guy's tree onto his property.
I gotta say, I applaud that.
That's pretty good.
This guy came home with like a carpet full of fallen leaves and a tree that literally did not have one leaf on it.
And a neighbor that he will never mess with again. Am I right?
Yeah, because I can rent all kinds of stuff.
That is, I have to give you some points for creativity there, Nick. Thank you for the call, sir. Appreciate that. Moses, you hang on. We're going to get to you last in Pomona, and I do want to hear from you because you are a gardener and you want to defend the leaf blower, and that's fine, too. Let's try Catherine, though, Seal Beach Line 4. She's in a lawsuit surrounded with a leaf blower. What's going on, Catherine?
So we share a fence with our neighbor in our backyard, and when we first moved in, we rolled in sod because it's dirt. So it's a few $1,000, and his tree hangs over our backyard, and it killed a massive patch of our grass.
Right.
So we went to cut it, and now there's a big lawsuit over it because he says we're not allowed to touch his tree. So every Saturday and Sunday at 6:30, he wakes up with his stupid leaf blower and blows leaves from his tree onto our yard.
So hold on a second. So his tree is leaning over your fence so that it's naturally dropping leaves on your grass. And then he adds the leaf blower so that his go on your lawn, yes. Right?
And his excuse was that he has a big pool in his backyard, so he can't have leaves in his pool. So it obviously belongs in my yard, not his yard.
I have a friend named Nick who I want you to get in touch with, who's got a ladder and a leaf blower, and he's going to hook you up.
I like that Omar is shaking his head, mad at that neighbor. Yeah. You're that neighbor.
No, I'm not.
You do that.
No.
You blow leaves onto his yard.
No. She said, no, what Omar does is blow the guy's tree that is on Omar's side, those leaves that drop, he's blowing them back over.
Those are his leaves.
This guy, in Catherine's case, is behind her, and he blows the leaves that are on his side of the fence over, as well as the ones.
We tried to cut his tree. Right. Yeah, so now he blows it. So like I said, every Saturday and Sunday at 6:30, he wakes up. And for me, it isn't early, but for the rest of my family, it is. And he just blows over. So I'm just waiting until summertime when I can drop all the leaves in his pool.
So is there really a lawsuit happening? Are you guys suing each other?
No, yeah, he's suing us because we tried to cut his tree, but his tree hangs in our yard, so it's on our property.
Well, you're gonna lose that lawsuit, by the way.
No,
I'm
no,
sorry
no.
to say,
Catherine. You should go take a poop in his pool.
Wow. I don't think that's what I'm recommending.
Don't
no,
show.
That's not either. But Omar and I will show up with ski masks if you need, and somehow that tree
yes,
will get
yes.
cut.
Yeah.
All right, thank
and
you, Catherine. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate the call. Let's give Moses the final word. He's in Pomona. He's been patiently hanging on. He is a gardener. So you're a bad, bad man, Moses.
Well, you know, it's weird. I'm like, my beef's not really so much with the blower thing, but it's in Santa Monica, man, because I work in Santa Monica. They don't let us use blowers at all. It totally sucks. There's properties that we have that are pretty big. And
I got to move to Santa Monica now. That sounds like the dream answer for me is to get away from these leaf blowers.
Exactly. You know, well, they don't even let us use the battery-powered ones. And, you know, like, I try to be really considerate. You know, we don't start before 8 o'clock, you know. We're pretty clean, but they're totally necessary, man. So I mean, a lot of people hate them.
They're totally necessary. Why? Because so you can get to as many houses as possible.
Well, some guys like to do that. We don't like to do too many houses. We try to do no more than like 7 a day.
Right.
You know, we don't want to kill ourselves out there. But no, I mean, it just makes the job a lot easier. I mean, there are times where we use brooms and stuff, and wherever we have to, you know, I mean.
Right. It may make the job easier. I'm not disputing that. Of course it makes the job easier for you. But what about the fallout for everybody else that's not you?
Collateral damage, I guess. You know,
that's
right?
What I'm saying is collateral damage. What about those people?
Yeah, no, we care about those people. It's just like I said, that, you know, there's some that are quieter, but there's really no way around it, man. I mean, they have to, it's a tool like anything else. It's a chainsaw. You know, we have to use them, and it's unfortunate that, you know, that. There's a lot of people that do hate them. It totally sucks.
It's unfortunate that they found someone who's willing to use one. That's what's unfortunate. Get a goddamn rake and shut up, Moses.